Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Thunderacious, had a bunch of lightning overnight, but we made it through. The electricity is still electrificating, and it is Friday on the front porch, on the horn, live from the hills and hollers of what is left of once beautiful, once wild, once wonderful, almost level West Bicod, Virginia. I'm Bob, of course, and we made it to the end. Made it to the end of a very interesting week, going extra innings to two nights out of the week. Last night and Monday night, the Memorial Day holiday night. It'll be a regular show. I don't dare use the word normal. Tonight, of course, or tomorrow morning, or whenever the heck it is you're listening to the program. I love global media. I love being global media. I love global being global media that is not in the sway or the death grip of the transnational corporations, because that means you, me, I, we get to say all kinds of stuff on this program. And there's something sort of refreshing about that. But it is. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn, and you are welcome to chime in this evening. You know how it goes. And I figured we would just, well, okay, program note. This is just another gentle reminder. While we have had as ordinary, if not normal, a week as one may imagine here on the horn, we get Abby on Monday. Abby? Abby who? Abby Normal. Yeah. We get Abby on Monday because come Sunday I get on the road, I pack the gig case and all the wires and the connectors and the clamps and the hoses and the, yeah, all of that stuff into into a vehicle, and I get my merry butt up the road headed for Washington, D.C., and the America's Future Now conference live from the Omni Shoreham Hotel. Oh, Lordy, how I wish that Guy James was able to join me for this one. I've gotten kind of used to working with Guy, and he will be sorely missed on this expedition. But he will be ably compensated for by the redoubtable, indefatigable Rick Smith of the Rick Smith Show, live from Pennsylvania, that gets played on this radio network on Saturdays and Sundays in the rerun loop. Rick will be there with me, and the way it'll work out is I will start broadcasting at noon and go to 3 on Monday and Tuesday, and Rick will follow me and do something like 3 to 6-ish, and then, or 3 to 5:30, and then from 5:30 to 6, Rick and I will wrap together, as in wrap up, not like, you know, yo, rap. No, I'm far too pink to do that sort of a thing. No, I can't. I'm just, no poetry on the fly. I can extemporize, but not poetrize. That's not even a word. So Monday and Tuesday, the live broadcast schedule is noon to 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Adjust for your time zone accordingly. Of course, podcasts will go up as ordinary and as usual. And then I had said there might be a show on Wednesday. There will not be because I'll be getting a late start out of D.C. No broadcasting on Wednesday, but on Wednesday at 1 o'clock, since I'm already going to be there, I'm going to run on down to the National Press Club. And I seem to recall where that building is. I've been by it a few times, but never in it. Run on down to the National Press Club, where Ashley Judd, the beautiful Ashley Judd, will be doing a presser on the topic of mountaintop removal and how it is continuing to destroy Appalachia. And I figured since I'm already going to be there, I might as well go on down there. Seems like the right thing to do. We need, if she's going to, she doesn't need to be the only hillbilly in the room, poor Miss Ashley. Mrs. Ashley. She's married to a race car driver, right? Dario, is it Dario Franchitti? I don't follow racing, so I'm sorry. But that'll put me probably 9, 10 o'clock getting home at best. So no show on Wednesday. We'll just call that a travel day and get back at it on Thursday and Friday of next week. So that's the schedule, just so you'll know. That's the America's Future Now conference. If you're not following me on Twitter, follow by all means. It's real simple, Bob Kincaid. That's what I am on Twitter. That's what I am here. It's what I am everywhere. I am Bob Kincaid. Follow me on Twitter, and to the extent that I have time, I will do some tweeting about the conference. I'm looking forward to it. We've got a very, very busy, very, very full lineup of guests scheduled for both days, for both Rick Smith and myself, and I think it will be a Jim Dandy good time. They always are. It's a pleasure working with the Campaign for America's Future, who puts on these events and brings in such fascinating people. I never cease to come away from one of these events without having my perspective adjusted or changed or just profoundly impacted, and I have no doubt that this will be the case as well on this trip. And a reminder, because it was made known to me it was suggested by Kate a while back that I make sure and let you guys know, when you contribute to support the Horn, you're not contributing to my globe-trotting ways. Because when we talk about keeping the Horn on the air, that's what we're doing, is keeping the Horn on the air and keeping all of this going. So, no, you're not in any way on the hook or contributing to my expenses in making the trip. It would be nice, since I will not be here, to press for it or anything. We will be ending week number one of our June fundraising tonight, and that would mean that by the night's end we should be looking at $500. We are in fact looking at about $175. Just so you know, so that's and that's not even taking into account the fact that we ended May in a hole anyway, so we're still working our way back to zero. But that's where that is. So enough of that. Yes, it is Dario Franchitti. Thank you, Marty. Thank you. Indy type race car driver. Was that meant as a little bit of a sharp stick poke toward Mr. Franchitti? Dario Franchitti, races Indy cars, right? Yeah. Or maybe that's as opposed to NASCAR, go fast, turn left. So, thank you for making us factually accurate, Marty. It's Friday on the front porch. I'm a firm believer in we got to have a giggle here and there. So we will start with one. You remember, I think, in fact, it was last Friday, was it, that somewhere along the way I worked in an old clip from a comedy duo named Clark and Daw, generally known to people who know funny stuff as The Front Fell Off. Well, lo and behold, I was having a conversation, and they're an Australian duo. I was having a conversation with John Fox, and John, who, of course, lives down there, says, oh, yeah, they're still working. They're on the 7:30 report every Thursday. And the 7:30 report is a show on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. abc.net.au, I believe, is the website if you want to go search them out. But lo and behold, with an immaculate sense of comic timing, Clark and Daw showed up on the 7:30 report in Australia with Mr. Clark playing none other than Tony Hayward. And having seen what we have seen of what's going on down there, what BP has done to the United States of America, you know what? We would have declared war if a foreign country had done this, but as long as it's a transnational corporation and there's some profits involved, maybe not so much. But no, Clarkendaw showed up with Mr. Clark. Oh, God, I sat and watched the archives of these guys the other night. John sent me a link. I just sat here cackling like a hen laying eggs as I watched episode after episode. You know, they're only a couple of minutes long, but they pack comic satiric brilliance into every second, and this is no different. So, and the thing is, this is so close to the truth. There are elements of this comic piece that are so close to the truth that while you may smile, you may not laugh outright. Because it sounds just a hell of a lot like what was probably BP boardroom reality. So from the ABC's 7:30 report, Clarkendaw, an interview with Tony Hayward. Without further ado.
Thanks for your time.
Good to be talking to you. Good evening.
Now, this oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, can you tell us what happened?
Yes, we're talking about an offshore oil rig, which is, of course, a large device for pumping oil out of an oil field under the sea floor.
Sure. And what happens if something goes wrong?
Well, we're trying to figure that out at the moment.
No, I mean before you start. What are the regulations
for dealing with
that problem?
You're not going to have a problem before you start.
Yeah, but what are the regulations?
The what?
Regulations.
Can you Google something for me quickly? Relegations?
No, regulations.
Regulations? Well, Google them both.
This is before you start.
No, you're not going to have an accident before you start. I mean, it's starting that causes the problem. There is no problem before you start. It's beautiful before you start.
So you're saying is that the accidents only happen when you get going?
That's the rule.
So what happened?
Well, in this case, there was a large explosion. The rig caught fire. 20 million gallons of crude oil spilled into the sea, and then the rig sank. I mean, everything happened.
So what did you do?
Well, first things first, obviously. The first thing to do in an event like that is to underestimate the problem.
What? Underestimate the problem?
Yes,
why
because
would you do
we
that?
Don't want people to panic. I mean, you've got to calm people down. A lot of people get very worried.
Why do they get worried?
Well, because the sea is filling with oil. A lot of people are very sentimental about the sea.
But understating the problem, surely not a solution.
Well, no, not to that problem, but first things first.
So what was solution number two?
Solution number two was to acknowledge the magnitude of the problem, but to point out that it's certainly not BP's fault. This is not our fault.
Whose fault is it?
I don't know, someone else, the bloke who built the wing nuts or something.
The solution doesn't sound very good.
That wasn't one of our better ones, but the next one was brilliant. We dropped a kind of shopping centre over the hull.
An underwater shopping centre?
Underwater shopping centre. We fitted it over the hull.
And did that work?
No, but it was a brilliant idea.
In what sense was it brilliant?
Well, we know that doesn't work. We won't be trying that again.
What was the fourth solution?
Fourth solution is to offer to help with the clean-up. We can help there.
Hang on a second. How do you mean help? Shouldn't you be doing the clean-up? I mean, well, you're the one getting the oil out of the ocean.
We're not getting the oil out of the ocean. That's useless, that oil. How do you get oil out of the sea? We've been trying for a week. You can't be done. It's useless.
Okay, so what about the fifth solution?
Fifth solution was to pump mud down into the hole.
What with?
Well spotted. You see, that's the problem there. Ultimately, of course, relief wells is the thing we're going to have to build.
And when
drill relief wells.
And when can you do that?
August.
Anything in the meantime?
Well, we've gone with a democratic solution in the meantime, which is nice.
What's a democratic solution?
Well, blame the president.
For causing the largest oil spill in U.S. history.
Bad mistake. People hate it.
But
People absolutely hate it.
But he didn't do it.
Well, he didn't prevent it, did he? I mean, have a look out there.
Thanks for your time.
He didn't prevent it, pardon?
Thanks for your time.
Regulations. No, it won't be measured in barrels. I think it's a different concept altogether. I've never heard of it either, but keep bloody looking.
Yeah. Like I said, there's places you want to laugh, maybe you might smile a little bit. And there's other places like, relegations? No, I've never heard of it either. Too much truth. Too much truth. And we will, of course, find our way back to BP's Chernobyl. Thanks, Tom, in California, or his young and wily son for coming up with it. Chernobyl, coming up with that phrase. It's another one of those cases, though, and there seems to be a conspiracy lately. This has happened two or three times now that something breaks right as I'm getting off the air, and I have to sort of struggle to hang on to rationality and sense and, all of that for 21 hours until I get to get on the air with it. I'm referring, of course, to professional speaker here. Don't try this at home. You can just wreck yourself. wrecked him, damn near killed him. Great punchline. No, I'm referring to South Carolina State Senator Jake Knotts. No relation to Don, I'm sure. Don was a West Virginian, you know. But every bit as silly as dumb as Barney Fife, and 3,000 times meaner. I'm sure you have heard of this by now. But yeah, South Carolina State Senator Jake Knotts, who is of course a re-pig-licking, went on an internet-based radio show yesterday evening called Pub Politics that is apparently broadcast live from a bar somewhere in South Carolina. No, that's not Bob being a smartass. That really is how this thing happens. It's broadcast. It's an internet. I don't know that it's live, but apparently the podcast is not going to go up now because Pub Politics is running as fast as they can to get away from it. Pub Politics said, first of all, you got to know what he said. There's a gubernatorial fight going on in South Carolina. Some repiglickins are backing the intensely closeted, hateful bigot Andre Bauer, who is lieutenant governor, who all by himself was the reason that South Carolina was unwilling to impeach Mark Sanford when Mark Sanford decided to go off and hike the Appalachian Trail. That's repiglickin' newspeak for bang his Argentine girlfriend like a cheap Chinese gong. Andre Bauer is why they wouldn't impeach him, because Andre Bauer is just a little too, you know, gay for a whole bunch of good, upstanding, family values Christians. But he's not too much for Jake Knotts, repiglickin' of South Carolina. And if you see pictures of Jake Knotts, you'll see that, okay, everybody, this is that romper room moment. I can see all the hands in the audience. Everybody, raise your hands if you've ever seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show, okay? You know that scene where the professor comes on to explain this, and I forget exactly what scene it is. Don't hold it against me. I wasn't exactly in a highly rational, conscious state of mind probably 99% of the times I saw Rocky Horror at the midnight movie, and, you know, had squirt guns and toast and all kinds of stuff flying all over the place and people dressed decidedly strangely. I was the normal one dressed as Eddie, you know, in the black leather jacket. But anyway, you remember that part in Rocky? Yeah, and there's a lot of hands up out there. Yeah, we'll be talking about the doobie later. Remember that part in Rocky Horror where the guy comes on and the entire audience on cue yells, "Where's your effing neck?" Well, if they decide to do a road show of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, he can be in the road company, Jake Knotts, or Jabba the Knotts, depending on it. Rather rotund, pink, doughy, pasty-faced man, typical repiglickin' politician, who got behind a microphone, and I can't overemphasize this. It's impossible. Who got behind a microphone? A microphone perhaps very similar to the one I'm behind right now. Or in front of. Never did get that quite straight. But who, in the near proximity of a microphone that was hot, and I don't mean like sexy, I mean like had power to it and was working at the time. See, when you work in broadcasting, and I've explained this because, you know, the little Kincaids and Agnes, at one time Agnes was my producer, and she'd never done anything like this before, and I said, "Honey, there is one rule, and it's just like loaded guns. It's just like a gun. It's just like a firearm. Firearm safety dictates that you always assume that any firearm you see is loaded and capable of firing and killing. So, too, in a studio, always assume that a mic is hot and can hear things and send things out into the world that you don't want to go." There are numerous examples. I believe former iconic University of Georgia play-by-play man Larry Munson even had one relating to things one ought not say around a microphone, even if one thinks it is not on. But, you know, the whole bloopers thing, the whole genre arose out of things that one ought not say around a microphone, even if one thinks it is off. Anyway, always assume all microphones are hot. And when you know they're hot, then you're on sort of double secret guarded, because unless you're just willing to run your mouth like I am, and it's the Internet. But this guy is a member of the state senate of South Carolina. And in regard to the member of the GOP, okay, the member of the GOP who is running against, one of several, running against Andre, don't feed stray dogs, don't feed stray humans, Bauer. He offered his opinion of why Nikki Haley, a member of the Republican Party, again, I reiterate that, a Republican, not a Democrat, not a socialist, not a death paneler, but a Republican, Nikki Haley, should not be the GOP, South Carolina GOP's gubernatorial nominee. Nikki Haley has gone to great lengths to make sure that all the fine, upstanding family values of South Carolinian pig lickings understand that she's got good, upstanding South Carolinian family values because she's a Christian. And she has to do that, you see, because, well, she's not all pink and doughy and pasty. Nikki Haley might even be considered a person of color, because Nikki Haley was born to Sikh parents from the Punjab. And in discussing her in front of an open live microphone, South Carolina State Senator Jake Knotts explained why it was that South Carolina didn't need Nikki Haley as its next governor. Pub Politics has buried the audio as far away as they can possibly put it, and will not let it out. But people still know what he said. Of Nikki Haley, Senator Jake Knotts of South Carolina said, "We already got one raghead in the White House. We don't need a raghead in the governor's mansion. They can get a harumph. They can get a harumph from that guy." No, he didn't say the harumph part. "We already got one raghead in the White House, and we don't need a raghead in the governor's mansion." But that wasn't the end of it. Right after the interview, in front of the microphone, behind the microphone, around the microphone, Senator Knotts, job of the Knotts, Senator Knottshead displayed his lack of understanding, basic comprehension of, and you've heard of it many times on this program, the first law of holes. When you're in one, stop digging. Because he walked over. Okay, this is one of those moments, if you don't want to have to explain the meaning of the word, and you don't want them learning to use it, and you don't want them using it, and you don't want them use it, it's time to send little Timmy, little Cindy, little Susie, and little Johnny out of the room. Okay, run along. You can come back. Uncle Bob will be done with his dirty word here in just a minute. Because this is journalism, see? This isn't me just throwing one out there for the fun of it. I remind you that I believe in real journalism where people's real words are reported verbatim so that other people can make certain value or fact-based judgments based on the person's own words. So personally, I think the New York Times should print this word that he said. I think, for instance, that my friends over at thinkprogress.org should actually print this word, because it is a real, live, honest-to-God word in the English language that was used by Jake Knotts after he made his, we've already got a raghead in the White House, we don't need one in the governor's mansion. After he said that, he decided to improve upon it. And he ran over to some reporters to do so. And he was trying to defend what he had already said when he said it again. First law of holes. No, he really did. Senator Jabba the Knots went over to reporters who have notebooks and pens and recording devices and write things down a lot, being as they are reporters. And referred to Nikki Haley not only as a raghead again, but as a fucking raghead. Well, after all, I mean, she's a fucking raghead. See, that's how it sounds like in Southernese. You fucking raghead. But then he said, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to use the F word. Isn't that just precious? After you use the word, considered by many to be the most vulgar of all expletives available in the English language, after he actually used the participial version of it, he then apologizes and refers to it as the F word. And then, working on getting the hole a little bit deeper, he readdresses the issue about, well, you know, I did say that thing about, I said that thing about raghead in the White House. It ain't the first time I've said that. As if it not being the first time he said it somehow makes it more normal, common, acceptable. This guy's a gift that keeps on giving. Because he, in the same interview, he goes on and he says, and this is from the newspaper of some sort called the Free Times. And it's a quote, and it's a story. It's in other words, it's narrative as well as a quote. He said, oh, God, I don't know if I'm going to get through this segment. After calling her a fucking raghead, he then goes on and says, this is work. He then goes, after calling her a fucking raghead and then referring to the use of that word as the F word and apologizing for it, he says, we need a good Christian to be our governor. She's hiding her religion. She ought to be proud of it. I'm proud of my God. Is that your fucking God, Jake? Oh, see, I did use it gratuitously that time. I'm sorry. You know, I think Nikki Haley's daddy's been sending letters to India saying that Haley's the first Sikh running for high office in Merca. You know, her daddy walks around Lexington wearing a turban.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sure enough, he does.
Speaking of the area of the planet where Nikki Haley, whom I'm not defending because she's a repiglican and she's obnoxious as heck anyway, but there is this overarching moral ethical thing about using racial stereotypes and the noxious bigotry and prejudice that, you know, the normal, the decent, the humane, you know, the liberals among us are still working on rubbing out of our society so that this can be a more perfect union like it says in the Constitution, don't you know? And speaking, after alleging that, you know, her daddy's writing letters saying she's the first Sikh to find it, I don't think she's really a Christian. After saying all that miserable, hate-filled, bigoted crap, Jake Knotshead said, referring to the place where Nikki Haley's parents come from, otherwise known as the Punjab. Romper room moment. Most of us have a geographic sense. We know where the Punjab is, right? Right? We know where the Punjab is. You've got a little picture of the Punjab in your mind. Right? Yeah. After describing all of that and about how she's from the Punjab, Jake Knotts, head, Job of the Knotts, said, "We at war over there. We at war over there. Yeah, war over there." Anybody got one of those do-it-yourself aneurysm clamps? Because I may be needing it. We at war over there. Some bitch. Jake Knotts' head must be getting... He's a Nazi, you know. That's what his followers are called. They're the Nazis. K-N-O-T-T-S-Z-I-S. Jake Knotts must be getting some sort of crazy-ass high-level briefing because from the CIA or, I don't know, maybe from the aliens transmitting to him through the tinfoil in his helmet. If he thinks that we got U.S. soldiers on the ground being at war in the Punjab, or maybe, I mean, there is, you know, the ongoing hostilities over the Punjab, right? Huh? What? No. The ongoing hostilities would be over the Kashmir. Yeah, this is getting worse, because if we've got American soldiers in the Punjab, we're at war with India. Right? I thought so. In the Punjab. Punjab. We're at war over there! Damn it! And now the denouement. The funny part of this is that immediately after he said what he said, even, and I emphasize the word, use of the word, even, the South Carolina Repiglican Party said Senator Knotts should apologize for his inappropriate comments so that we can put this unfortunate incident behind us and focus on issues important to moving our state forward. This here. Inappropriate comments keeping us from moving our state forward. It's inappropriate. It's unfortunate. You know what? You got to give the South Carolina Repiglican Party at least a D for effort. At least they tried, you know. They get the, you know, they'll get the trophy, the Little League trophy at the hamburger cookout too for, you know, showing up.
This is an unfortunate incident. Damn, it's unfortunate. It's an incident. With that there inappropriate comment. Does the South Carolina Republican Party not know how to use the word bigot? Does the South Carolina Republican Party not know how to use the word racist? Let's see how that thing works. Let's see how that statement works if we use real English words. Senator Knott should apologize for his racist comments so that we can put this bigoted incident behind us and focus on issues important to moving our state forward. You know, it must be hard to be an organized political party when you spend half of your time putting 90% of your political perspective behind you and trying to move forward. Sad thing. I would warrant that there are in excess of 500,000 people in South Carolina tonight going, well, she is a raghead. He's just telling the truth like God gave him the lights to see it. They make some cars in South Carolina, don't they? They don't just make any cars. I mean, it's not like they're making Fords down there or anything. They're making some BMWs, ain't they? Beamers. How you reckon BMW sales gonna go down with some of them ragheads? You know, doctors, lawyers, accountants. How do you think that's going to go down with them? Uh-oh, Mr. Knott's head, you Nazi, you. Because, see, they buys BMWs in London, and they buys them in Berlin and Paris. And, yeah, they buy them in Delhi and Mumbai and Calcutta. And they buy them all over South Asia. And here's another little problem for Senator Nazi. That's Nazi with a K and N and O, two T's, and an S and an I. The biggest BMW plant outside of Germany is in South Carolina. Uh-oh. Really? Uh-oh. We just want to put this behind us. Unfortunate. It's been an inappropriate comment. It's unfortunate. Can't we just put it behind us and y'all pretend that the Republican Party ain't locked up down in long about 1859? Please? I'm sorry, South Carolina Republican Party. You get to own Jake Knott's. But that's okay, because you got a lot of South Carolina pig lickings agrees with him. There's a whole lot of us out here who are rethinking that whole secession thing and thinking y'all might have been right the first time around. Bye-bye. And of course, there is just a precious, precious moment. There's a precious moment in the whole aftermath. Because after being reminded by his own party that his comments were inappropriate and unfortunate, Senator Jake Knott's, that just sounds dirty, doesn't it? Senator Jake Knott's done come out and said,
what he, well, about as much as he can do for an apology. He said, my raghead comments about Obama and Haley were intended in jest. That's it. No, really, that's the apology. My raghead comments about Obama and Haley were intended in jest. Sorry. That's it. You'll notice that in that apology, there's no apology. Shh. As David in Tennessee notes, mark my words, he'll get reelected. It'll probably be a landslide. Because that's not bad politics, and raghead is not a slur. Or well, the problem with Senator Knotts is he got caught out in public talking about things the way that we talk about them in private. Don't you know? My raghead comments about Obama and Haley were intended in jest. Gotta give Jake Knotts old Nazi there, you gotta give him a little something for brass, if nothing else. But I do love. my favorite part of this is the whole retracting of the F word. Sorry about using the F word. He didn't apologize for using the raghead word, but he did apologize for using the F word. And you'll forgive me if it takes my twisted mind precisely here.
Old woman! Ma'am, sorry. What night lived in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman.
Right. I did say sorry about the old woman. I did say sorry about calling her an effing raghead. But she's still raghead. Daddy walking around the streets of Lexington with a turban on his head ain't got no shame about him whatsoever. Damn. What do you say? What do you... Because see, the problem here is that this is not... This is not one of those isolated incidents. And it's not unfortunate. And it's not something that just happens. This is something that is deeply ingrained in the culture of South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, Louisiana, Arkansas. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that? I didn't mean to say that in front of you. If I'd known you were standing there, I would have just called you a raghead instead of an effing one. I only meant it in jest. Boy, go get me a lemonade. See, that's just in jest. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, if you're not... if you don't realize how far we still have to go. Kate writing in, I search far and wide for times when I can use the word denouement. So do I. Why do you think it was there, Kate? It doesn't just present itself every day. But in all seriousness, Kate says, he has no idea what fierce warriors the Punjabis are. What an ignorant bunch of folks, those old white pigs. They're all going to be dead someday. May they all go to heaven when they die. In the morning. Wow, Kate, you've put a word in your email I ain't even going to repeat on the air. He should have called her a curry, and it rhymes with runt. That would have been a badge of honor to some of us. Just saying. As David in Tennessee notes, this is not isolated to Jake Knotts. This is who they are. And the Repiglican Party has spent 50 years recruiting the Jake Knottses of the world. And they're still recruiting. They are still recruiting. Still recruiting. And in all kinds of places, all over South Carolina and all over the South tonight, pasty-faced white people are looking over one shoulder, looking over the other shoulder, looking left, looking right, looking back left again, casting their beady little eyes all around them, and then in a lowered, hushed voice, they're saying, "He didn't say nothing wrong. It's just like Nixon. He just got caught." He didn't mean nothing by it. That's just how they are. She ain't no Christian. Really, Jake Knotts has been at war with Nikki Haley, for whom I carry no brief. She's a repig-licking and as hateful and noxious as any other, just differently. She's kind of like maybe a female version of Piyush Jindal down there in Louisiana who ran out today to make sure that the oil industry still knew which side he stood on and said, "Now, we don't need to be stopping drilling." Tough to stomach. Oh, I did say sorry about the effing part, but wonder, because all I can do is wonder. I don't have the magic to pull it up on the fly. Wonder how many teabagging rallies Jake Knotts has been to. Wonder how many times he's talking about getting the government off our backs. What we need here is some states' rights. Yeah, you won't take the over. Because we know it's a huge number, don't we? Yeah, we kind of do. And there's more and similar along the way, of course. And plenty of time to get to all of it. You know the phone number. It's Friday on the Front Porch, 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. I think we're going to have an interesting night. Light them up. Let's talk. We won't be doing any talking until Thursday of next week. Get your licks in. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Horn. Pigs. Bye. I really am glad that David in Tennessee reminded me of that BMW angle. This is the horn. Because I think I like that one best of all. Why?
Well, because Republicans worship at the shrine of the corporate state. They really do. It calls for apologies from the Southern Poverty Law Center, the NAACP, the Indian American Society, the Sikh Preservation Cultural Heritage Foundation. None of that means squat.
To the South Carolina State Senator Jake Knotts, don't mean nothing.
But if he picks up the phone, or if the phone rings in his state senate office, and he sees the blood drain all out of his secretary's face, and she says, Senator, boss, there's a man on the line with a heavy accent, says he calling from Bavaria. Says he's munching on something. Oh, no, he says he's from munching. I don't know where that munching is. You want to take a call, boss? When Jake Knotts picks up the phone and he hears this thick, heavy accent on the other line saying, Was gibt mit das Rughead? And then a string of something that I think I heard somebody sing a song like that with some woman with hair under her arms one time. Something about balloons. Damn! It's BMW! Oh, hell. Now I've screwed the pooch. I done messed with capitalism! How's I supposed to know they didn't everybody else call them ragheads? I mean, I'm cosmopolitan. I go down Charleston twice a year. I've been to the city. Damn. Done got BMW mad at me. What in the hell am I going to do? That is the beautiful moment. That is the moment when the little economic thumb screws get twisted on Senator Nazi. That I would pay to hear. Wouldn't you? I don't know why I didn't play the Hour 2 intro, but I didn't. Following up, a note in from our good friend David in South Carolina, one of the team of Davids that has been with the horn for ever so long. David in South Carolina chiming in following David in Tennessee's observations. David in South Carolina sending me a post from his blog, The Lucky Rooster. Headline, and this ain't like, you know, this is not from 10 years ago. This is from yesterday. Headline, South Carolina police, black man shot to death, body dragged. Dateline, Newbury, South Carolina. That's Newberry. Newbury. Come on, Bob. You're going to take away your Southern card. Newberry, South Carolina. The shooting death of a black man whose body was dragged for several miles is being investigated. See, you only get writing like this out of a state like South Carolina. Let's try this again, Bob. Pass me the aneurysm clamp. I need to put it back on. The shooting death of a black man whose body was dragged for several miles
is being investigated as a possible hate crime. South Carolina State Police Chief said. This could be a clue. 19-year-old man by the name of Gregory Collins made his first court appearance Thursday. He's charged with murder. Shooting death of Anthony Hill, 30 years old. State Law Enforcement Division Director Reggie Lloyd told the state newspaper, "We don't yet have a definitive motive for all this." Now, bear in mind that 19-year-old Gregory Collins has jug handle ears, his head is shaved to nigh bald, and he's got one of them little Satan goatee mustache thingies going on for him. Beady little eyes. A neck that goes clean up to his eyebrows. He gets better. Law enforcement officials would not discuss what evidence, other than the race of the men and the dragging of a body by a rope, which one would think was a clue, would lead them to suspect the crime might be a hate crime. Might be. Sometimes, brothers and sisters, sometimes, just keeping the clothes on, not running naked in the yard, screaming, just screaming. It's everything. One of these days, Agnes gonna have to chase me down. I'm gonna read that again, so that you can get the full import of it. Just sort of waller around in the weasel wordage of that reportage. Let me get into newscaster mode. Hang on. Law enforcement officials would not discuss what evidence, other than the race of the men and the dragging of a body by a rope, would lead them to suspect the crime might be a hate crime. But they did say such evidence existed. Investigators in the bizarre rope dragging of an African-American man's body across 10 miles of Newberry County countryside are focusing on a large weapons cache. Don't! See what happens? I'm trying to play it straight, and I still can't. I come unglued. We're focusing on a large weapons cache found inside the suspect's mobile home. Authorities said they're also exploring specific evidence, which they will not discuss, that leads them to believe the shooting death and subsequent dragging of Anthony Hill, 30, of Winnsboro, is a possible hate crime under federal statutes. But they stressed they've made no determination. Thursday, more details came to light in the strange case. Really? In South Carolina, that's a strange case? It makes one wonder about the definition of strange down there. In addition to blood in the residence, blood was also found on the bumper of the pickup truck alleged to have been used to drag Hill's body, tied with a nylon rope along rural roads before the rope snapped and a passerby found the body. Inside the home, authorities found some 20 or more assault-type weapons, numerous pistols, at least one shotgun, ammunition, knives, and a laptop computer. Both Foster and SLED Chief Reggie Lloyd, State Law Enforcement Division, that's what SLED is, said the number of guns in Collins' trailer, about 8 miles from the town of Newberry, far exceeded the number owned by the average 19-year-old. And then there's this quote. Oh, strap in, my fellow Horn brothers and sisters. Strap in, strap down, and if you have to, take the nail gun and put your feet to the floor with it. Because you're going to come flying out of your chair with the next one.
we want to know. Now, remember, we're talking about those weapons. They far exceed the number owned by the average 19-year-old, even in South Carolina, apparently. One of the things we're trying to figure out is, where did he get those weapons? In South Carolina? You can get them in a damn gumball machine. It's South Carolina. The Second Amendment's the only part of the Bill of Rights they still give a damn about down there. They're right pissed off about the 14th. One of the things we're trying to figure out is, where did he get those weapons? We want to know, did he possess these weapons to do harm? Door's looking real, real, real inviting. Just go out and roll in the clover a little bit till I get over it. We want to know, did he possess these weapons to do harm? Did he possess the weapons for sport? Why was he so infatuated with weapons? And this, oh, I hope someone's mailed this in, because this one should land Officer Foster. This should land Officer Foster in the Law Enforcement Hall of Fame. I mean, right next to the bust of Sherlock effing Holmes. We want to know, did he possess these weapons to do harm? Did he possess the weapons for sport? Why was he so infatuated with weapons? And then this question. Boys, start carving the bust. And did those weapons have anything to do with the lead-up to the death of Hill? That's Newberry County Sheriff Lee Foster. And then there's Mr. Lloyd, Officer Lloyd. We don't want to attribute something to Collins that ain't necessarily true, but out of precaution, given the circumstances, we are investigating the racial angle. Out of precaution, given the circumstances, we're investigating the racial angle. Investigate the racial angle. You know what it is? This ain't nothing racist about it. This is what happens when good literature goes bad. It is clear to me, it is abundantly clear to me, that 19-year-old Gregory Collins, this is what happens when you don't have good Christian literature in your public high schools. This is what happens when you let that filth, them Greek mythologies and stuff in. Because I guarantee you, Gregory Collins had just got done reading that there Iliad all about how Achilles killed that old Paris and tied a rope to him to the back of his chariot and dragged him 30 times round the city walls of Troy while his daddy watched. That's what it was. This is what happens when you let that heathen literature into your schools instead of stories about Jesus. That's what happened. It's obvious. They only see. That's what they're going to find, because they only investigating that racial angle as a matter of a precaution. It's clear to me, no matter how many books by Glenn Beck. I'm looking at the picture. I'm thinking, unless this thing had like pop-up audio, Gregory Collins wasn't no reader. Looks like we got us a reader. No. You'd think a house like that, you'd probably find some Glenn Beck books and some Rush Limbaugh books and some Michael Savage books and some O'Reilly books, but you're presupposing his ability to read them. No. I think he's a reader. There's a bright light of intelligence in his piggy little eyes. And I feel comfortable saying it's clear to me that because there was dragon involved, it's entirely the fault of the secular humanists. If they didn't want them sick books that ain't got no Jesus in them in our libraries, everybody'd probably just fine today, because we're only going to investigate the racial angle as a precaution. Yeah, precaution. That damn Paris. That Achilles. Hadn't gone reading about that and all them heathen gods. Everything fine. That'd probably still be just fine as frog hair. I'd be real careful about driving in South Carolina with any other kind of license plate on my car if I was you. I mean, I'm in West Virginia, and we take no end of grief about us being hillbillies and everything, but do please remember, Deliverance is shot in Georgia. And when you want just good old-fashioned racist mean, or good barbecue and the best shrimp and grits on earth, well, you go to South Carolina. I swear you go. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston, what's up?
Oh, a few things. Well, basically wanted to say hello, catch up with you, and you're going on a trip, is that right, next week?
Yep, headed to D.C.
Great. To, what's the Democracy?
It's the America's Future Now, Campaign for America's Future.
Great. I saw Van Jones is going to be speaking there.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get behind my microphone, but I'm going to try to raise a ruckus and see if I can get him there.
Well, he's another person that, again, I'd be more than happy to contact a publicist and see if...
Oh, that'd be beautiful. We need to talk about getting serious about making Appalachia a part of America.
Right on. And you're on Sandra's calendar also. I tried emailing you again, and it bounced back to me.
Try it again. I had to get more space on my Gmail account. I had almost worn out my welcome with Google.
Okay. I can imagine how many emails you're kind of inundated with also.
Well, I can't stand to throw any away, and I think I've got something like 30,000.
Wow. I'm kind of a pack rat when it comes to my emails, but but I don't have that many, but I'm sure I don't receive so many as you do. But anyway, so yeah, I hope you have a great time at that conference. And I wanted to mention we've got some very interesting things going on here. For instance, I was reading the other day in the Denver Post a story about some immigrant women who formed a cooperative, and it's a cleaning service, and they use non-toxic cleaners entirely, and just a lot of interesting organizing like that going on around Denver. And what else? Read another story about a business that opened up called In Season Local Market, and they sell nothing but foods within a 250-mile radius of Denver to try to support local farmers and family farmers and, cut down that need for fuel for transporting food all across the globe. You know, the system that we have is always talking about its efficiencies, but it's the most incredibly inefficient thing.
You know, I had one of those little teaching moments, Preston, the other day with my daughter, Doodle, who hates raisins. And I know that may sound crazy to you, but this actually ties in with what you're talking about. Doodle hates raisins. I don't know why, but she does.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, honey, those aren't raisins. Those are dried grapes. And you love grapes, right? Oh, I love grapes, and she does. I mean, I bring grapes into the house. You know, she grabs them and huddles Gollum-like in the corner. My precious grapes, you know. loves grapes and hates raisins. And I was just trying to work. You know, we were working one of those little teachable moments. And I said, honey, do you know why there are raisins? And she said, because some people like them, but I hate them.
and because, you know, she's my daughter, and she got the hard-headed part from me, Preston. And I said, no, honey, there are raisins because people once upon a time liked to have grapes in January, too. What do you mean, Dad? I said, well, see, grapes don't grow year-round, and people didn't always have access to them year-round, so if they wanted grapes in January or February, they, by God, better have some raisins laying around. So they dried their grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what do you mean can't get that? We just go to the store. Now, this is my doodle who is in gifted, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wonder why. Never mind. Shh, don't anybody tell I said. But she said, you know, I said, yeah, but honey, and I said, next time we go to the store, we're going to look at the grapes. We're going to see where they're from, honey.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, where are they from? I said, well, I've brought them home in January and February. She said, yeah, that's why I'm asking. I said, well, those were from Chile. She said, Chile? I said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I won't mention the fact that she then said, is that near Spain?
You know,
and I said, no, honey, that's in the southern hemisphere, about as far from here as you can get and still be in the same hemisphere. She goes, oh, I said, they put those on boats.
Mm-hmm.
And they use lots of oil to get them on the boat from Chile to California, and then they put them on a truck, and they drive them from California to you.
Yep.
And I said, honey, that's not sustainable. So we had this whole teaching moment about sustainability and eating local and paying attention to your surroundings.
And, you know, that kind of international trade could be sustained if the transit made more sense. You know, we could use sails again. We don't have to use all this diesel oil. And, you know, I'm not entirely against, you know, stuff traveling many miles to get to us. But, again, it's the method of how it's getting to us. It's what's being sent. Is it cadmium-filled Shrek shot glasses for children? Or is it something useful, like an organic fruit, something beautiful? We could go back to sales. It'll take a little longer, but
I want to see somebody rebuild a clipper ship, just because I'm geeky that way.
You know what's going to be really cool, and I think this is going to happen one generation or another, hopefully a sooner one, but the return of the buffalo. I mean, the United States had its own kind of Serengeti in the high plains areas, the prairie lands, the buffalo. You know, tens and tens of thousands of them, the antelope, all kinds of birds, and the grasses, everything. It was amazing. We could bring that back, and they're starting to, you know, Sierra Club and groups like that are starting to send people out and take down some of the old barbed wire that's been, you know, trapping animals for decades. But taking it down, it's not serving a purpose many times, and just creating these corridors where wildlife can kind of try to get reestablished, and it's working here and there. It's even becoming more mainstream. You know, on some of our highways, they're starting to, you know, build, you know, like underground tunnels or tunnels that the animals can, you know, instead of getting on the highway all the time, getting run over.
Right, right. I've read some about that. I've seen a little bit about that here and there.
Yeah, yeah. So, in the midst of all this destruction, it's good to see that there does seem at the same time to be a growing consciousness and empathy towards the natural world. So, what else? I don't know. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know I'm sure you have a lot of people who want to say hey before you take off, but I'm just looking forward to hearing enough from Sandra and some of your other callers, and it's
well, cool, and I love the fact that you you get it, Preston. I mean, everybody who calls in, you and everyone else, you understand that this is not Bob's show, and that's, you know, that's something I try to get across to people who've never heard the show before. This ain't about me.
Mm-hmm. It's a cooperative. The show is a cooperative.
Toaster for Preston. Yes. It's a co-op. Oh my God! It's co-op radio. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Fun. Great, man.
Well, cool. Have yourself a great weekend, Preston. And then I don't know if you caught me or the program announcement at the beginning, but we're live noon to 6. Well, let's see. I guess that would be 10 to 4 your time, Monday and Tuesday.
Okay.
Because that's the broadcast hours for the conference.
Okay. Super.
And I've got an absolute boatload of folks, and I mean it'll be into the chair, out of the chair, into the chair, out of the chair. Going to be talking to a lot of people.
Wonderful. Maybe C-SPAN would be willing to go by and tape the festivities. You know, they go to other sorts of conferences from time to time. I don't know. Maybe if they're encouraged, they might consider it. Anyway, great, man. I'm looking forward to hearing that and tell my other people in my network about it. I'm sure they'd like to check it out, too. So.
All right. Indeed. Preston, have a great weekend and take care.
You too.
All right. Bye now. Preston calling from Denver, the resident horn optimist. And I just got an email rolling in. It's a sort of an, well, I'll just read it verbatim. Well, Mr. Kincaid, I sent you an email concerning the Newberry, Newberry County killing 2 nights ago. Whatever could make you think it's racially related? They just worked in a chicken plant. The average 19-year-old in South Carolina has 6 weapons, you hear now? Signed, Peckerwood P. Cornpone. This is Cooperative Radio. Beautiful. Let's keep it going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, I gotta tell you, I didn't really think of Rocky Horror when I looked at that guy's picture.
No, the only thing that sent me to Rocky Horror was the absence of a neck.
Well, to me, it was the movie Porky's.
Ooh, yuck. Yeah, okay, I can go with that, too. Straight out of Porky's Central Casting, without a doubt.
It just rolled right in there, you know. Anyway, the reason I'm calling in is there's a couple things. First of all, up on the main page in the featured section, people, I do not recommend looking at this on a full stomach or just before you're going to sit down for dinner. Please don't. It's stomach turning. It's a link to the pictures that BP does not want you to see.
More of them.
Yeah. It's bad. Really bad. Secondly, seeing as how this stuff is just horrendously depressed. I was sitting in front of the computer thinking about opening a vein last night. And so for want of anything better to do, I started hitting the stumble button on my toolbar.
Oh, you're a stumbler, are you?
Oh, yeah. I ran across a site, and I'm going to put it up on the main site because if there's going to be something that ugly, we need something beautiful to balance it out. And what it is, it's a virtual choir. 185 voices, 243 tracks, 12 countries. None of these people have ever met each other, but they have downloaded the music. They have sung their parts via YouTube. It was put together, and it is wondrous.
I'll check it out after the show.
It's beautiful music. So, a little bit of beauty to...
to round out the nastiness?
To help clean off some of the nasty, icky, horrible... I realize it can't get rid of everything, but it might keep you from having nightmares. Or, if nothing else, it will keep you from having quite so bad of nightmares.
Take the edge off, as it were.
Yeah. And I really hope somebody points out to that Yahoo in South Carolina that, hey, we want to go to war with India. Yeah, that's 1.18
Yeah, because they got. But I tell you what, if we're at war with India, as Senator Nazi says, if we're at war with India, Susan, we got a real problem because of that trade deal George Bush struck with them, because they got nuclear weapons and we got mangoes. I don't think we can out-mango their nukes.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And they're, you know,
mangoes go great on wonderful organic yogurt and stuff, but they're nothing you want to use to face down an army.
And on top of that, he should maybe consider this. The only thing holding back those nukes, really, is one of them colored people by the name of Gandhi. He should think about that, maybe.
Well, you know, I mean, if you used to ask Senator Nazi about it, he'd have to tell you that Gandhi was a communist.
Oh, God. The ignorance is just...
Because, I mean, no, really, the Senator Nazi has been working hammer and tongs trying to convince people that there is a Sikh cabal in South Carolina who is trying to get a Sikh woman who ain't really a Christian so that she can spread her Sikhy turbanness all over godless South Carolina, where godly people drag Negroes behind trucks by ropes.
I gotta tell you, given the choice between these redneck idiots and first of all, this woman is a Christian, which means she's just as crazy as he is, and secondly, given a choice between a Christian and a Sikh. I'll take the Sikh any day. I'll take a Muslim.
I know a little bit of it, not a lot, but a little bit about the Sikh religion, and you know, it's a fascinating story, and a fascinating faith. You know, I'm not going to run out and convert or anything. You know, I look at religion, Susan, like for me, it's like going. Now, I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about the religions. I study religions like some people go to the zoo, because there's scary stuff and fascinating stuff and funny stuff and creepy stuff and just, you know, you just sit there looking at it goggle-eyed.
Yeah. Why do you think I stayed away from all the organized religions? And you better believe I studied all of them, because you put everything in everyone. If you put every one of those religions through a computer, and every one of them is going to crash that computer because of the inherent logical defects.
Oh yeah, and by the time you get to the egress, you know, this way to the egress. By the time you get to the egress with any given faith, Susan, and by the way, if you're not believing this one, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
Or some version of it, or God will, you know, God will spit in your Wheaties or something like that. You know, and I just remember, every religion is an atheist with respect to all other religions.
Uh-huh, exactly.
You know, and you gotta remember, as David in Tennessee reminds me, you gotta remember that, that Gandhi, he was one of them brown skin fellas, and he taught that MLK all that stuff he used to agitate all the niggers with.
Oh, God. I do have to...
Granted, that's sort of on the fly and everything, but really, Kate pointed out a couple of minutes ago, she said, lots of Northern Yankee unwashed in the blood think you're doing parody, Bob. I ain't.
Yeah, I know you're not. I can remember a guy I used to work with at a call center. He was from that area of the country and he'd been up in this part of the country for decades. Clear as crystal, this memory just popped into my head as soon as this issue came up. Was him. Oh, I don't know how many months after 9/11. I walked up to him to say we needed to do something, and he said, oh, okay, just a minute, I've got to take care of this raghead first. I'm just standing there. I'm going, what? What? First of all, I looked it up because the databases were open. he was talking to somebody with a Pakistani name who was living in Detroit.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you prove it's, you know, to be fair to the Deep South, it is not limited.
Oh, no, but I do have to say, this guy did start out in the Deep South.
Well, okay.
Yeah, that's where he...
Trying to do a little hope there, and then you just rained all over it, Susan.
You know, after decade upon decade of in the Pacific Northwest, you would think he'd learned. No,
there are some things that all that Pacific Northwest rain just can't quite wash away.
Yeah, and it's just, you sit there and you go, I can't believe I just heard what I thought I did. And you're standing there with your mouth open going.
And what do you do? You know, the moral thing is to confront the guy and say, you know, that's really sick.
Yeah, we had people like that, a lot of them, because this was when George Bush was just really going to town. And we had tons of these conservatives, neocons, in the call center. And so the very few liberals around, apparently call centers didn't attract liberals. You would think being a geek would. We would go around and we would just, I mean, it was nasty of us, but we would just lambaste the crud out of them. We would.
For good reason.
Yeah, well, we would never tease them meanly, but we would always show up their logical fallacies, and it just drove them fucky.
Susan, good to hear from you, dear. Have a wonderful weekend. And everybody knows that you're one of the news ninjas, and you kindly handle my blogging needs with the show posts and stuff. I don't know what we're going to do in the way of a show post for Monday and Tuesday, but we will be some busy little folks.
Yeah, what time does the show go on for next week? Is it
Monday and Tuesday we go on at noon Eastern, which would be your 9 a.m.
Okay, so I've got to change the time. Okay, cool.
Right.
I will change it.
Yeah, because, see, there's nobody...
Get me the stuff.
When you go to these conferences, there's nobody that really wants to be interviewed between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m., so I have to change my schedule to accommodate them.
Yeah, so if possible, get me the information the day before.
Okay, I will certainly try, and, you know, since it involves me working in full daylight, you know, I'm going to have to show up with my little vampire cape with my high, you know, the high collar, you know, because I'm, you know, working at high noon.
Don't forget the keys.
The what?
Don't forget the keys. The fangs.
Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly.
Well, you know, Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
You brought it up.
It's my fault, Susan. You have a wonderful weekend, all right?
You too, Bob.
Take care.
Love to hang.
All right. Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
It's so dreamy. Oh, fantasy free me. So you can't see me. No, not at all. With voyeuristic intention, from another direction, well secluded, I see all.
Ah, yes. I'm guessing you've been to a few of those midnight showings of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, too.
Well, yeah, most of the time I went disguised as magenta. But nonetheless, being here, Colonel Cornpone, who sent you that email, I was just wondering why you didn't get my email the other night about that. And while they did say it could be somewhat racially related, but they just didn't know.
We ain't sure. We're looking for clues.
All he is, you shoot that in the head and drag him a little bit.
10 miles, till the rope broke.
Oh, boy, that's a hell of a note, isn't it?
And for me, with that story... It's a hell of a note all the way from law enforcement down to the Associated Press writer.
Pretty well, I mean, I can just imagine that Newberry sheriff with his big belly hanging over his belt and, you know, probably you see the hairs coming out from between the creases of his shirt, scratching the back of his head. He just didn't know if it was or not. Sure didn't sound like it to him, but he had to check it out.
Blows my mind.
By the way, I have a picture here and from Details Magazine, and it's one of these churches that's been established. It's a Pentecostal church, I think, and I don't mean to offend anybody, because like you said about religion, what's one man's religion, his religion is another man's atheism. But this is like one of those signs with a wheel on it, and it's got Reformed Church. Now, this is what it says. Sunday service, 10 a.m., second line. Bingo Tuesday, stroke Friday, 8 p.m. Gay exorcism, Wednesday, 9 p.m.
No, it doesn't.
Yep. And it says, pray, help is coming. Quote. Gay exorcism, Wednesdays.
You know, that's right up there with my special drinking cup of holiness that I keep right here. I've got it in my hands, referenced it in the last couple of shows. It came my way a long time ago from an overrun or whatever from a cup printing manufacturing company. It's the special drinking beverage cup from the Cornerstone Community Church, 6639 St. Mary's Road in Floyd's Knobs, Indiana. And the first line when you turn it around on the back of your special holiness drinking cup, it says, need field up. Worship time Sunday at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at 6:30, meal provided. Need field up?
Well, you know, incidentally, guess who was on the Joy Behar show this morning or last night?
Who's that?
Ted Haggard and his wife.
Oh, yeah, they're opening a new church, right?
Well, Ted said that what had happened to him was he had had some traumatic incident that was wrought by one of his father's employees when he was in the second grade, and that's what caused him to go gay.
Nothing about the fact that, you know, God made gay people along with straight people, or no, somebody snorted meth off his butt in second grade. Is that what I'm to understand here?
Well, he didn't exactly get that explicit, but, you know, I thought he was going to say that he took that course that Anita Bryant started called Be a Homo Nomo. But he was sitting there with his wife, and she was just grinning and seeing, so they were going to start over, and he was going on about his finances and this, that, and the other. I noticed that's one of the first things he brought out was his financials. Future was ruined, so he would have to start again, and he would create St. James's Church that would be a haven for all people of all faiths and all creeds and all manners of sexual orientation. So that's basically what Brother Ted had to say.
Well,
I mean, I wish him well, I do, but I mean, I thought to myself, this is ironic, trying to say.
But see, you're a better man than I am, Jim, because I don't wish him well.
Well,
because he's made so many people's lives miserable, and he tore, you know, how many people in that?
I try not to harbor any ill will in my heart toward anybody, because it ends up hurting me more than it does them.
So. I know, and that's why I say you're a better man than I am. Because
so here's the thing: what Joy Behar said, and I would have loved to have taken that quotation out of A Clockwork Orange when Alexander Delage was taken into prison. Are you now, or have you ever been a practicing homosexual? And, of course, Hagger said, oh, no.
No, I just had sex with a gay hooker and snorted meth off his butt.
I don't know. You know, it just amazes me.
Well, and you know, along the same lines, I don't know if you caught the hissy that Bill O'Reilly had. And, you know, he's such a silly little freak, O'Reilly is, you know, that
he
culture.
Was Lent 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a culture warrior out there, and he's got a legion of other culture warriors in nursing homes all around America, you know, because his demographic is 97 and up.
Oh, yeah.
But he was having a hissy about this new commercial that McDonald's has running in France, and he sneered in France, that includes Gasp. A gay guy pining for his boyfriend. And of course, O'Reilly was just completely wrought. And on the and it's not really worth playing the audio about it because the McDonald's commercial is, well, you know, I guess we've got a couple of French speakers in the audience, but not a bunch. You know, it's so silly. You know, it's so 19th century. It's so antediluvian, if you will. And on the heels of that comes, I know you watch your fair share of news and so forth. You know who L. Brent Bozell the third is, right? L. Brent Bozell the third?
You know, Bob, I hate to tell you this, but I think not.
Somewhere along the way, your brain has done you a favor because he's been, you know, he was all over CNN and all the other cable channels from time to time all, for years and years and years. He runs the Media Research Center.
Okay.
And it's a right wing screed factory for, you know, the usual suspects. And he is up in arms, L. Brent Bozell the third is. And he's mad at a television show in the great line of having hissies about things that aren't real, like Falwell getting wrought about Tinky Winky and James Dobson screaming that SpongeBob SquarePants and Patrick are gay lovers. We now have L. Brent Bozell the third, who is really, really pissed, Jim. He's just mad about the television show Glee.
Why?
Well, you see, Bozell is mad about Glee because, and this is a quote from a column he recently wrote at a little weird right-wing website, the only characters on Glee disapproving of homosexuality are vicious school bullies in the May 25th episode. Two brutish football players threaten to pummel the openly gay and riotously effeminate character Kurt for dressing up like a girl. Everyone else in this series approves, endorses, or participates in the homosexual lifestyle.
He actually wrote that?
Yes, sir. I read it word for word. Didn't add nothing.
Well.
Now, bear in mind, this guy is funded, of course, by the usual suspects, David and Julie Cook of the Cook Industries fame, who just throw millions of dollars at anything right-wing. It's one of those situations where, by comparison, if we had a real liberal on our side, like David and Julie Cook, I wouldn't be fundraising on the horn for people to contribute by their $5 and their $10 because we would have enough money to burn a herd of wet elephants given the quality of what we do and the dedication with which we've done it. But we don't on the, here on our side, so, you know, we struggle along. But, yeah, he gets bukus of money from the oil industry and, you know, Cook Industries, ExxonMobil, that crowd to write things like the fact that he's mad about the only people in a show who hate the homos are a couple of Neanderthal bullies from the football team.
I'll tell you something. When this business about don't ask, don't tell finally comes to a head and hits the Senate, and then, of course, even if it passes the Senate, it's going to have to be signed off by the president. And even after that, then it's going to have to be sent into the Pentagon for further consideration. And I thought that was very strange because basically when you are in the Pentagon and you get your marching orders from the Hill, you have only one particular function, and that is to translate them into DOD directives from the public law, and you proceed as to how you're going to implement these things. There are no questions left to be answered. But apparently on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, there will have to be further consideration and further input. And I'm sure that it's just part of another way to throw a stumbling block in front of that until.
Well, I don't know if you've seen this latest, Jim. You know how it is with the right wing. They understand trench warfare far better than our side does.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, they've got a trench.
They pass their own pop. They shall not pass.
Right, and they've got a trench with a trench behind it for fallback, and a trench behind that for fallback, and a trench behind that for fallback. And now that, you know, upwards of 80% of the American people are going, Jiminy Christmas, just let people serve in the military. Who cares how they have sex or who they love? It's the military. And most of the country understanding that the military already has at least a proportion of gay people in it that is relative, identically relative to the proportion of gay people in society as a whole.
The military really reflects the image of society, and that's the percentage is 10%.
Right.
I'd say probably 10% of all people serving in uniform and serving honorably are of that persuasion.
Sure. And so now that they've lost the it'll weaken the military fight, they've fallen back into the trench of we're just not ready for it yet, and they've been run out of that trench, and they've fallen back into this latest trench typified by, and God knows why CNN even publishes this tripe. They gave Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, a former insurance hustler who bought lists, who bought contact lists from David Duke. Tony Perkins filed a special to CNN essay, My Take, and this is the latest fallback trench, ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell would undermine religious liberty.
Religious liberty?
Mm-hmm.
Did he explain how?
Well, because in his sick and twisted vision of his sick and twisted religion, Tony Perkins believes that he has a religiously guaranteed, protected right to engage in hatred of other people and to advocate for, you know, the things that, like the Old Testament says about you know, being gay.
You mean in like Leviticus?
Yeah, like stone them to death.
Yeah, do the same thing to people who eat shellfish, and what about 600 other things that have the same penalty?
Yeah.
Okay.
But just be aware of it. That's their latest fallback position. They're going to have their religion violated.
Well, I don't mean to appear ineloquent, but that's just a load of shit. And there's no way they can defend.
No, it's crazier than a sprayed roach. But whoever accused that crowd of being sane?
Oh well, you got a point there. You certainly have a point there. But this don't ask, don't tell thing is going to be a bit of a sticky wicket, and I'll guarantee one thing: they'll use that every way they possibly can against anybody who supports its repeal. And that's one of the things I hold against Bill Clinton. When he came into office, he made a promise that he would not allow any further discrimination. Just like Harry Truman, you know, when he integrated the armed services. Bill Clinton should have said, look, I'm the commander in chief. This is the way it's going to be. And if any of you don't like it, they'll let the door hit you in the ass on the way out, because there's someone who can always replace you. Because a lot of those brass hats up there think that nobody can replace them.
And see, the thing that I'm waiting for with the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Jim, one, it will make life dramatically more just and more equitable and more fair for the enlisted community. You know, your E4s and your E1s and what and so forth.
Well, I certainly hope so, but, you know.
But what I want to see, the minute it's repealed, and you know it's going to happen. Somebody who has been going around, doing talks about the nobility of the military and little old blue-haired ladies at the church have just come up and shook his little hand and said, God bless you for your service, General, Admiral. And Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to end, and one of those generals, one of those admirals in Air Force blue or olive drab or navy whites is going to stick his hand up and go, Yoo-hoo! And all them little old blue-haired ladies are going to have their heads explode.
Well, maybe their heads do need to explode from all that bluing they're putting on their heads. I don't know.
But I tell you what, I got to share something with you, Jim. This just came in from our buddy Ron in Raleigh. There is a certain grim humor, and it's not humor. You know it, you recognize it, as do I, as does any Southern person. A certain fatalistic humor, I guess, is what you'd call it, about the nature of the crackers and their hate and everything down there. Ron in Raleigh just called with, wrote in with a question. He says, is Mr. Peckerwood T. Cornpone any relation to Jubilation T. Cornpone of Dog Patch, U.S. of A.? And then he adds, as far as that Negro fella in South Carolina, he was more than likely trying to steal that rope.
Oh, my God. Oh, Lord, I don't mean to laugh.
You're not laughing at, you're laughing with. What you're recognizing there, the thing that's engendering your little chuckle, and the thing that when I first read this email, I had to pull my mic down because I snorted outright, was the recognition that, yeah, that's how that works down there. Yeah, see, teach him steal him rope.
Well, that's exactly the truth. Probably so. I mean, you know, it's just incredible. I mean, even after so many years of, well, supposedly some type of liberation for that type of mentality, it's still alive and thriving quite well, actually. As a matter of fact, I think there's really a resurgence in it, to tell you the truth.
And our dear friend Fancy out in Arizona pointing out something else, and very, very seriously, she says, I would think, post don't ask, don't tell, I would think that the big problem for the military after don't ask, don't tell is enacted will be all the cases of former service folks petitioning for honorable discharge and full post-service benefits.
I would hope so. Because the Pentagon has spent literally millions of dollars ferreting these people out. I mean, not to mention the fact, I mean, back during the Gulf Wars, they, at the Defense Language Institute at Monterey, rid themselves of 11 Farsi-speaking specialists because they were gay.
Right.
And, you know...
Well, what about the guy who had run bombing runs over Iraq and Afghanistan... the academy grad on whom had been spent literally millions of dollars teaching him to be a master of his very deadly craft.
Exactly.
And got tossed out because of what?
He was homosexual.
Yeah, because they didn't like who he wanted to love? Because they were concerned with what went on when the lights went out? What? Yeah. There's not anything sane or sensible about it.
Well, these people probably have these conceptions that they're going to be these hairy orgies and all these kinds of crazy things. And it just is a proof of their own ignorance and their own stupidity. Like I said before, they'll labor like scholars over the pedigree of their own ignorance, but every damn one of them would have slept through the Sermon on the Mount. Well, listen, I know you've got other calls to take, and I'm going to end on this note. To quote Florence King, I may have slept with people of both sexes, but I never smoked in the street.
Amen, 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 Brother Jim.
Good night, sir.
Have a good weekend. Take care.
You too.
Bye now. Never smoked in the street. Let's see. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Mr. Kincaid.
The other David.
Yes, the other David. The other David who should have called on Wednesday, because I have a story that should have been mentioned on prayer meeting.
Okay.
Wednesdays. Well, apparently a martial arts fighter who was very religious. Now, this is where it gets very bad, people. A martial arts religious...
You've only started the story, David, and you said this is where it gets very bad. It ain't going to go uphill from anywhere,
yeah,
I take it.
I know. He apparently was sparring with his partner in training. And apparently the partner was showing symptoms of satanic devil possession.
Did you say double or devil?
So what do you do when your partner is showing signs of satanic devil possession, and in the background you hear the exorcism theme? Well, what he came up with a great scenario. What you do is you just don't beat him you don't just beat him senseless, you actually rip his heart out of his chest.
Huh? What?
Yes. Yes.
Did this happen? Wait. Did this happen in America?
Yeah. I think it may have happened in South America. I'm not sure on the location on this, but if somebody wants to do some backtracking on, they can. And apparently, that wasn't enough either, so we ripped out his tongue, too. And everyone just stood in awe and said, why'd you do that?
Rosary in one hand, dead chicken in the other. Lottie wins again.
That's something right there. I don't know what to say about that.
So they're just working on their kickboxing.
Yeah, it was just training session. And apparently he was.
You know, maybe it was Taekwondo, maybe it was Muay Thai. You know, who knows?
Yeah, and he was hallucinating a little bit, I guess, showing some symptoms. And he had to take care of the devil, which is and apparently it didn't even occur to him after he'd ripped his heart out of his chest, which I know this is wrong, but when you think of that, I always think of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh,
and that priest.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where I went.
I know that's the reference point.
Oh, Kalima, yeah, that guy.
And of course, you know that it was the lesser Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they put a plot device of an Asian kid in it.
And yeah, it was the Indiana Jones. The short title is the Indiana Jones movie that sucked.
Yeah, it was the Ewoks.
Yeah, there was the first one, and then there was the first one, and then there was the one with Sean Connery, and then in the middle there was the one that sucked.
Yeah, the one.
And nobody saw Temple of Skulls, right?
I don't think. I actually watched about 30 minutes of it, and I said, I can't take this.
That bad?
I mean,
David, you're the Horns, pop culture correspondent.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't just bail on something.
No. I was watching it, and I said, wait a minute. This is about the Crystal Skulls, and then I thought about the. I had just been surfing Dan Aykroyd's Crystal Skull Vodka site. I can't entertain this crap.
Yeah, right. There's only so much you can take for the team.
But by the way, someday, Rob, you have to play. You have to, I mean, because it's so insane. I've been waiting for you to. I've been wanting to torture you for years to play this. You have to play the entire promo video that jackass Dan Aykroyd put on the Crystal Vodka. Oh, my God. You want to talk about it's a cross between SCTV, Saturday Night Live, and Ancient Aliens on History Channel.
Oh, Jesus. Do please send me the link.
Yes, I will send you the link. And people... It's hard to believe that he's...
Is it terribly visual, or will the audio...
Victoria Jackson moments, but this is a person you look at as a... You look at this person as a monolith of comedy. I don't care who you are. If you grew up in the 80s and in the late 70s, Dan Aykroyd was your man.
Oh, so, way, way, way back when I did, you know, theater. I was on more than one occasion, I was referred to in write-ups as... projecting a sort of Dan Aykroyd-esque presence. So, yeah, I know from which you speak.
Well, you know, the thing about Dan Aykroyd was, it should be remembered. It probably should be remembered on his epitaph. At least the first part of the Twilight Zone movie was good.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, I mean...
That's a place I didn't want to go.
What's that?
That's a place I didn't want to go.
I try
never to think about Twilight Zone, the movie.
I always thought that sequence that he did, I was like, wow, they had the best kind of riff and narrative on the playing of the songs on the radio. They could have turned this into a story, and then what did they do? They just went for the remakes. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, they bailed too.
Yeah. So, I just wanted to share that story. And before I go...
Getting an update. No, not South America.
Not South America.
No. Fancy pointing out that's from Klamath, California. I probably mispronounced it. I'll get emails. Klamath, California, after a cup of mushroom tea.
Ah.
So do not, I guess rule one, if you're a religious fundamentalist, do not do your Muay Thai sparring after eating mushroom. Yeah, what is it with some people? You know, the whole point of hallucinogenics is to take them and relax. And the only way that bad stuff like that happens is if, like, you got really bad juju going for you in the first place.
I just got another bad flash of Jean-Claude Van Damme when he makes a move on the screen, and then all of a sudden he slows down and you hear him go, "Nah." And for those who have seen Bloodsport or Lionheart, you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking
about.
Or played Mortal Kombat. Get over here!
Or Mortal Kombat, exactly. The last thing I wanted to mention is something pretty amazing that I don't think I've seen anyone else mention it. And it's a medical breakthrough where the scientist team from Boston University actually cured Ebola with four monkeys with a dose 30,000 times more than the average dose of Ebola. And it worked, get this people, 100% in all four monkeys. Yeah. So what they did was they injected these test subject monkeys, similar to, I guess, Outbreak or the 12 monkeys or whatever you want to. Whatever reference point you want to go there, and they injected them with 30,000 times the normal dose it would take to someone would be subjected to the Ebola virus, and apparently this group stumbled on, I guess for all sense of purpose, for all sense in the word, a potential cure. Because all four test subjects, and then they went back and they studied the monkeys, and the monkeys seem to be doing fine right now. So that's good news.
Well, yeah. But I just, you know, there's something about playing with that stuff, even on a research basis, that gives me the just...
I think, you know, we have to delve in those areas to do that. And I was thinking, wow, they actually risked four monkeys to do this, and... I would have tried the cockroach or something, but because I'm not a fan of the cockroach.
But somebody is, David. Somebody is.
I know somebody is, and
you know, to the same extent that I was horrified when I found out that there was an American Coal Ash Association. I'm sure that on the other side, somewhere out there in the spectrum, there is an American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Cockroaches.
Right, and one last thing I wanted to mention to people. I haven't got the DVD yet, but I would suggest it would be a great time to have this guy on the program. Is the director of the movie Petropolis, which I believe just came out on DVD about a month and a half ago. And for those people who are not up on this movie, it's a aerial presentation of the tar sands in Canada. So you see it firsthand from a helicopter.
Oh, what a horror.
Yeah. And it looks like we're headed in that direction, too, as well.
Beautiful. You know, just beautiful. And that's the thing I keep trying to get across.
Yeah.
You know, we've got this limited media, this media-driven limited attention span.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to be really, really gentle about it. Because everybody who listens knows that my main, you know, I am most affected by that which is closest to me. To wit, mountaintop removal. To wit, you know, the horrors of coal. And not trying to compare horrors or anything. Just pointing out to folks that even still, as bad as it is, the Gulf oil gusher crisis disaster still has a long mathematical way to go before it reaches the gravity and the toxic spread of the Kingston coal ash disaster in December of 2008.
Right.
And as mean as it may sound for me to say it, I'll go ahead and say it. Maybe we would be paying a little bit more attention to mountaintop removal and the horrors of coal sludge and the poisoning of Appalachian communities, and also that, you know, look, strip mining in all its forms has to end. I need to be clear about that because people, oh, well, it's only in Appalachia. That's all Bob cares about. Oh, hell no.
Right.
You know, if my good friend, our good friend, Jeff Biggers, writes beautifully and frequently and with great passion and real facts about the horrors of what happens in Appalachia, but he is sitting in his house right now in southern Illinois, and they are blowing the hell out of that. Okay? Yeah. And it's the same thing with the First Peoples on reservations in Montana and Wyoming and Arizona. And I have to be an advocate for ending that, too. It's all of it. It's got to end. And the thing that I have said, and it may mark me as a little bit shallow, I don't intend it to go in that direction, David. But the fact of the matter is, if I had some sludge-covered birds and a couple of dead dolphins to drop around a sludge lake in southern West Virginia, maybe people would begin to understand the goddamnable horror of it. And that's not me bitching at you. I mean, it's...
I understand, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah, it's everything. It's everything. It's what's going in the rivers. It's what goes in the little rills and runs and the wadis and whatever you call them out west, and we call them, you know, we just call them streams in the hollers. Cricks.
We get emotional at little cute animals, but when it's a sullen, coal-covered hillbilly... That's not going to fly well.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe I need to drag out the Homer Simpson fish that the coal industry's helping breed here. You know, the ones with twisted spines and three eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe you could have some people dress up as bears or animals and just lay in the coal sludge. And then people go, oh, my God, look at that bear.
You know, and that's the thing. You know, we don't get them back because people have documented around things like the Brushy Fork impoundment or the Shoemate impoundment or one of the other. You know, it's icky around there. But there have been cases documented where bear tracks are seen going in and no bear tracks come out. Somewhere out there is banging around the audio of a mama bear and her cubs screaming as they are buried alive by a coal company.
Mm.
I've only heard about it. I've never heard it myself.
It's funny how causes are picked up and certain causes are ignored, in particular this country. One would wonder what would happen if this happened in a progressive place in Europe. How long the coal ash, if they had a coal ash disaster equivalent to what happened in Tennessee, what the reaction would be there.
Yeah, and let's remember, just for the fun of it, that coal ash is radioactive as hell.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's not just the selenium, not just the cadmium, not just the barium, not just the arsenic, not just the mercury. It's the radioactivity. But I guess it's just... not sexy enough. And that makes me sound like shallow and mean-spirited, but that's not where I'm trying to go with this, David. Well, I'm trying to point out the fact that it is a cohesive whole of ecological and environmental terrorism that is being waged on the whole country and the whole world by these transnational bastards like Massey and BP. You know, just because Tony Hayward speaks, you know, with a respectable English accent and speaks Queen's English, doesn't mean that he's any less of a, for all his blue-bloodedness, doesn't mean that he's any less of a son of a bitch than Don Blankenship. Just because Tony Hayward knows which goddamn fork to use to eat the shrimp doesn't make him any better off than Don Blankenship eating his peanut butter and throwing his double cheeseburger at his maid because it's got pickles on it.
You know, before I go,
I'm sorry, I'm doing all this to you on your nickel, and that's just...
No, that takes me to a place. No, actually, it's on your nickel because I called a toll-free number. But anyways, that reminds me of... it gives me a visual reference every time I see Tony Hayward, and people can think along like on the ways that I think now. But I actually think of... on the series Lost, there was this character called the Smoke Monster.
Yeah.
And whenever the island was under danger or under a threat, a shofar horn would sound, and the Smoke Monster would come out and judge accordingly to people on the island who were in the vicinity. And if some people if some people were not to the smoke monster's taste, the smoke would literally form into a fist hand and pick them up and just start smashing them into the ground. Now, if you could picture, that's what we need. We need a smoke monster on the Gulf and just traveling around picking up oil executives and Halliburton publicists. I would be for that. I don't care how cruel that is. I would be for that. I want a smoke monster on the Gulf.
Exactly. Just like, you know, just like I want Don Blankenship to drink a great big jar full of coal sludge because he says it's perfectly safe. That's not me. That's him. And I want Tony Hayward dipped in crude. That, you know, that's just me because I'm mean.
And one last thing before I go. I hope you have a great trip. I hope you have a great trip, and it's an enlightening, inspiring experience, and you learn.
Well, thanks, David. They always are.
Thank you so much. But the one last thing, thank God, Gary Coleman wasn't having a gay affair with Michael Jackson. And I'm out, people.
Food for thought, indeed. Thanks, David. Take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine, and we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Sandra.
Hey. So, I see that, you know, they've made some sort of executive decision not to, blow up that Irish boat with the Nobel laureate on it.
No, what?
Well, I mean, I was reading an article that, you know, they plan on stopping it, but, you know, I guess they're not going to shoot up anybody.
Oh, so they're going to do it how then?
I don't really know. I just was saying, I saw that and I thought, yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But,
No Turkish destroyer alongside or anything? Because that's really what needs to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's nearby. I think it's whatever's going to happen. It's probably going to happen pretty soon. But, that situation is just so, unbelievable. And I can't believe, they just shot up people, like multiple bullets type of situations. Not just that one.
No, no, there was a hail of gunfire.
I'm saying everyone who died got shot the hell up. I mean, it's incredible.
Chewed to pieces. Yes.
But, you know, this whole thing about, it was an American citizen. You know, I just have to rethink because, you know, whatever's going on here, I mean, you saw that article I sent to you about the latest in corporate America?
Yes, I did.
I mean, that one, I don't want to say I was shocked, but I'm just sort of like, wow. I mean, it really does seem like it's off. There won't be any stimulus, so now we've got to figure out a way of making this palatable.
Right.
And like
yeah,
I
we're
said,
this is the... I don't know. What do you call it? I don't know. This is the PR part of the process.
Well, I'm not too sure because there's always real people on the other side of this process. But what I'm saying is that for a long time the U.S. has always had a 5% unemployment. You know that deals with structural and functional unemployment that it's just there. But we've always been able to so-called provide jobs for people who wanted them. Blah blah. So, you know, it would justify no unions, you know, no safety net. But like I said before, they're trying to make 15% the new norm. Now, how you do that in a country with no safety net is beyond me. So I'm curious to see if they really are going to demonize these people. They're lazy. I mean, because those arguments are already coming out of some of the re-thugs. But I think it's spreading because the deficit people are starting to take over again.
I think that's becoming very clear. And I don't understand why these miserable deficit people are getting the traction they're getting.
Well, no, it's really bizarre because, see, even at the height of the Clinton, when they were doing the deficit thing and how they convinced them, no, you can't spend because of what the Republicans did before he came in office, we still weren't looking at the unemployment numbers like we have now, you see.
Well, Sandra, let me interrupt for just a minute. Let's back up, if we could. Kind of just to sort of provide a little bit of continuity and clarity to what we're talking about. Do the thumbnail version of what it is that we're talking about, so that everybody will be on the inside of it. Please.
Okay. Yeah. Basically, it's corporations that are hiring are now saying people who apply need to have a job in order to apply.
The unemployed need not apply. It's like the old 19th
right.
century, no Irish need apply.
Right. It's a whole sort of thing that, it's always easier to get a job if you have a job. But see, that was going on when there was only a 5%, i.e. natural, unemployment rate. So they could play that game. But see, they're doing it now when there's a 15, 16, 20, 30% in minority community unemployment rate. That's like standard. So at the same time, you have the government not, reauthorizing COBRA subsidies. And I think the Senate left before they could deal with the unemployment insurance, right?
You would, yes.
So right now you have people, millions of people losing access to whatever little safety net that they had. And
once they lose that, it doesn't matter how hard they try, corporate America has decided that they're not worth employing.
Right. So basically you're unemployed for 6 months, you become person non grata for another job.
Right.
So,
and what's the official governmental term? At that point you become a discouraged worker?
Right. But I mean, it's just sort of banal and so evil. What's going on? Because, like I said, if you look at our foreign policy, and use the Israel thing as an example, I'm just waiting to see what the rhetoric is going to be to basically disappear these people, and I mean that figuratively, out of the press, just out of the mainstream. So they're going to be able to suppress 15, 20, 30 million people. Who need jobs, and I'm trying to figure out how that's going to work. Because, trust me, if people can't eat, they don't have nowhere to sleep, and it's in the millions, that might be a bit of a problem, even in this country.
We're talking about the creation, Sandra, of what you, a permanent underclass.
Right.
A permanently desperate class. And I guess the thing is, for all the reference that I've made on the program tonight to all these racial issues, what a certain percentage of white America is about to find out is that that white privilege ain't working quite as well for them as it used to.
Well, no, that's going to take a hit because if what I think is going on is this sort of total. American-style austerity, meaning that it's just going to be kind of slow for us. You see what I'm saying? But it ain't going to be no damn different than what's going on in Greece. Mark my word, after this next election, who knows, it's probably going to really, escalate. Why does he have that commission in place? They're kind of tiptoeing around it now because it got an election.
Right, You're asking the right. Why is that thing in place? Robert Reich is out there again saying the stimulus not enough. Need more stimulus. The problems are going to come back because not enough is being done to it or done with it.
No, but see, you only have two choices in this situation, though. If you go Keynesian, you can't do some half-ass shit, which is what's going on now. You need to provide fiscal. A meaningful fiscal policy, which means you got to raise taxes on the rich.
Hence the Hillary Clinton quote about Brazil's tax to GDP ratio.
Well, I'm just saying, there's no way because I don't mean to get I'm not going to bore because the whole economic thing is like glazed over. But what's happening is that they're trying to restart what was before in 2007. But hello. There is no demand because there's no wage growth. Without wage growth, you cannot increase demand. So it destroys whatever tax base you have. So it's like a deflation spiral. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes the kind of sense that you know, those 3 a.m. beads of sweat, the kind of, because that's how nations stop being nations.
Well, yeah, and it's just sort of, see, we've decided that we're going to save the banks. We've given trillions to the bank, and they were supposed to restart the lending process, right? But because we have almost perfect capital mobility in this country, what do you think someone's going to do? If I get a pot of money and I know about capital mobilities and inflows and whatnot, no, I'm going to take my little pot, I'm going to invest in whatever country has a higher interest rate than the near zero shit here.
Well, why wouldn't you?
I'm not going to lend to nobody. Okay, because the banks don't have any Glass-Steagall anymore, they just took that money and went where they can make the fastest money in short term, which wasn't in the good old U.S. of A. So now we have, like, stagnant lending. You know what the story, and the story is not good. So, and I'm just wondering what, you know, and the Obama administration, they don't seem to understand that they...
Hey, we added 413 jobs to the payroll this month, last month.
Oh, my God, that is so scary what that was. I looked at that...
I'm sorry, 413,000.
No, but 400,000 of that, you know, is just census jobs. You know that, right?
Yeah, I do. I wasn't going to say anything, but...
So, and 41,000 was some anemic private sector job creation. Last month, there was 200,000. What happened, Bob?
Math ain't working for me, Sandra.
Oh, no, but it's just all so really horrible. And, you know, I'm like, and, you know, because I'm just like, let me just go ahead and enroll in this master's program I applied to. What do I sound like? I know. What can I say? But my ass ain't going to be destitute. Bump that.
No. And you know, it's like something David in Tennessee is pointing out to me, Sandra. He says, look, we've manufactured our way out of every economic problem we've ever had, but manufacturing's not our long suit these days.
Oh, no, it's terrible. It's terrible. There's no...
been offshored.
Yeah, there's no policy, there's no industrial policy, because there's no more industry, really. But
Well, there is, it's just been moved to Guangdong province.
No, but when you have this kind of unemployment situation, see, I don't think people realize that those jobs ain't coming back. And, you know, it's starting to take on that India model, where you have a bunch of college degree people, and there's no jobs. You know that model?
Yeah.
Well, that's coming to a city near you. You know, and it's just horrible.
And I, and I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to be a smartass about this, Sandra. As an Appalachian person, some of it you say coming to a city near you. Hell, that's been in the city near me for as long as I've been here. That's the economic reality. Frankly, we talk about Haiti and Somalia. In many ways, this is the Appalachianization of America too, Sandra, because all we've ever known here is boom and bust mono economy.
Oh, yeah, and also the boom and bust, and it always hits the people who work. You know, working people are the ones that are subjected to capitalism. It just wasn't so blatant as it has been in the last 3 years. Everyone knows now. But before, it was just working folks who were subjected to the whims of the market. Economic professors and them people, you didn't have them asses being replaced by, you know, economic professors overseas. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because they have a collective bargaining agreement. Trust me, I've seen it. And it's just, you know, and it's just like when them folks start getting done over, which they are slowly, you know, it's all starting to, the race to the bottom is starting to creep up. But that just means the end of the middle class for us. If the coordinating classes are being screwed over, you know it's about up.
It's getting way past ugly. Ron in Raleigh writing in just to be, you know, offering a little bit, offering something to this as well. He says, the Business Roundtable, are you familiar with them?
Oh, that's, Obama spoke to that, yes. Yeah.
The Business Roundtable, Ron tells us, has declared that their intention is to send 25% of the remaining jobs in the U.S. to foreign countries. The books, and then Ron adds, the books on employment having been cooked since the Reagan administration, unemployment now closer to 17% than it is the alleged 9.7. And Ron says, if we start producing 350,000 to 400,000 jobs a month, it'll take 6 years to get back to pre-recession levels.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and obviously if you're doing 44,000 a month, well, do the math. And the Business Roundtable, God, that's a horrific organization that Obama spoke to not long after being sworn in, if you remember, talking about how he's a market kind of guy. See, you got to remember those sort of things. I don't forget it. I just take notes. I'm like,
See, you're like, yeah, because that stuff's handy to remember.
Well, it's just watch what they do.
It's kind of like remembering when John Kerry went off to spend Christmas with Arnold after Arnold called him a girly man.
Oh, right. Yes. Or
John Kerry quitting the fight for the presidency, the fight for us. With, what was it, 440 million, something like that, still in his war chest, and Ohio not even certified?
You really do have to wonder. It makes you wonder about, I just think the whole thing is just a wretched class war, and, you know, we're losing big time, and we don't even know it, because people think everyone's in.
Well, there's those that don't, and back around to this, and we touch on it from time to time, Sandra, there's those that don't know it, there's those that don't know they don't know it, and it's getting kind of Rumsfeld-esque in here right now. And there are those who don't care that they don't know that they don't know it.
Yeah.
And it's that last group, the don't cares, the American Idol voters.
Right, I'm about to say, yes.
Those are the ones that scare the piss out of me because they're the, like the Bible says, they're going to be the ones standing there crying, Lord, Lord, when it really starts hitting the fan.
Well, no, but the thing is, though, I just think about those. I just think that there's a portion of America now that the people who are running stuff, I think there's an attitude that they're quite happy to cut shit loose now. Like the Gulf, oh, well, cut it loose. If it turns black, whatever. I don't see the urgency. I don't care how many times Obama goes down there now. I mean, did they cap it? What's the latest?
No, I mean, yeah, but no.
Yeah, I heard it was leaking even more for a minute there.
Well, look, I've said this the last couple of times we've talked, and I'm not trying to be salacious or anything. I keep saying, is there a nipple on top of that thing?
Yeah.
Guess what? There is.
Yeah, and also.
And I reiterate, as long as there's something capturing oil and taking it somewhere else, like to a tanker ship, then that tells me that they're not serious about ending this.
What? I see that freak stepped aside from the day-to-day commenting on the spill, the CEO.
Yeah. But there is more news out on Tony Hayward.
Yeah.
Did you see this backgrounder on him?
Oh, no. God knows. No. What's the...
He caught a bunch of hell for his I want my life back comment.
Yeah, they talked about his life?
We know a little more about his life now. ABC News did a report where I guess they went back and they researched some BP company publication, and they found a quote from that article. I don't work weekends, and I take all my holidays, the British CEO once told a BP publication as he explained his affinity for triathlons and West Ham football. Sailing through the tropics and skiing in Vail, Colorado are annual rituals with his wife, a former BP geophysicist, and their two kids. Cue the Leave It to Beaver theme.
Oh, he might need to stop looking like Mr. Bean first. Listen, you know what?
You can't just do that.
Let's not start on that fool. Oh, he's horrible, isn't he? I don't know. No offense to that actor. I love him. What's his name?
Rowan Atkinson.
Roy, yeah, he's done some great shows. Oh my God, that Black Adder. Come on now.
I saw our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent me a a clip of that from it was like World War One clip.
Yeah, those one. Yeah, I know. I bet I know the one.
Over the top.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's. I mean, you know, he's just sort of a sort of. I don't know the. You ever heard of those Carry On films from way back?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's more that. But nevertheless, well, I digress. It's just that guy. It is Mr. Bing for sure.
With a little less morals, you know, Mr.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Bean at least has some sense of ethics.
Yeah, I was more so the kind of chicken neck effect is what I was thinking of. And you know what? You just about killed me with the "Where's your fucking neck?" Are you kidding me with that?
Oh no, I've been in that theater too many times, and the dude bears a slight resemblance.
He does, and it wasn't just "Where's your fucking neck?" It was no neck. They would just scream every time he'd pop up.
Yeah,
turtleneck. You know, just it went on and on. That was so funny.
I think American. We need that America back where young Americans got to go and vent their frustrations via a very healthy viewing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show on Saturday night at midnight.
Oh, you know what? I was there at, like, I think I was 17 when I first went and saw that madness. Yes, that was hilarious. Well, anyway, you know, I don't have anything else. I'm kind of...
I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
You know, but I just sort of... I'm just disturbed by how the unemployed are being treated, so.
Yeah, look, I don't know, having been a discouraged worker for so long, it gets to be the norm after a while, but, you know.
Oh, I haven't had like a real, real job in I don't know how long, and just because I just got this degree, it looks like I'm not still going to have a real, real job. So.
Yeah, but you're working it now. Go get that master's. Stay in the system as long as you can. Get the post hole digger. Do whatever.
Yeah, well, no, listen. You know, it's like I can sit here and type up and get some of that old Negro money that's out there. I'm working on it right now. It's like, oh, Negro, you want to go back to school? Yes. I'm sorry. I'll leave you with that.
Oh, I need fat old white guy money.
Exactly. So, you know, it's out there. And, you know, I don't mean to be so shallow and you know, trifling about it, but this is out of control. It's also mercenary. Good Lord.
That's exactly what it is, Sandra. It is exactly what it is. They're teaching us to eat our own flesh.
Oh, it's terrible. Okay, take care.
See you, Sandra. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye now. Oh, God. Oh, she slays me. She just kills me sometimes. Sorry, I'll be all right in a moment. Huh. Obviously, I think it's fairly clear that Bob needs to take a little break and collect himself. With that having been said, we're going to take a little break and come back and wrap up the program, come to your calls, finish out the blinking lights and so forth. Man, what a week it has been, honest to God. I got a little thing here for you, and I think you're going to love it. Via David in Tennessee, from the genius, and I do not use that word lightly. Billy Joe Shaver. A little sound portrait as you contemplate the things that Sandra was talking about. A little sound portrait of the America we used to have. Not the one we got now, but the America we used to have. This is the horn.
In the good old USA, I'm proud to say, we had brand new action, good old fashioned too. And the future so bright, like stars in the night, just smiling down on everything we do. Great big harvest moon, they as can be. Got a hold of something here worth holding to. Yeah, the USA is made for me and you. Like to say, tomorrow's dreams are always coming true, and the whole blessed world, all the little boys and girls, are counting on the old red, white, and blue. We got faith in the Lord, we got Chevrolets and Ford, we got folks working hard to see us through. Their money's worth my betting on the land of the free. Yeah, the USA is here for you and me. Billy King, you know? Of course I can. Faith in the Lord, we got Chevrolets and Ford, we got folks working hard to see us through. All the people of the earth, they only get their money's worth by betting on the land of the free. Yeah, the USA is here for you and me. Yeah, the USA is made.
Yeah, not no more, Billy Joe. Not no more. But it's worth remembering. It's worth remembering because maybe somewhere along the way, the opportunity comes along for us to get a chance at rebuilding. You know, one of the folks I will be talking to in D.C. coming up is a guy I've had it, had behind the microphone. On other of these trips, really engaging, intelligent, brilliant man by the name of Scott Paul. Scott Paul, you heard Sandra say a few minutes ago, we don't have anything in the way of an industrial policy. Remember that? She said that. And I'm here to tell you, she was right, because we don't. Governmentally, we don't. But you will get to hear from, and I will speak to him directly about this. I will speak directly to Scott Paul about the want of real industrial policy, because the organization with which he works is the Alliance for American Manufacturing. They're at AmericanManufacturing.org, and they are working 24/7, 365, generating what the government won't. And that is a real industrial policy for retooling and rebuilding the industrial base of the United States of America. So, look forward to that conversation, as I do. Before I do go back to the phones, a story. And one that just grips you like a knot in your gut. From Raw Story. Headline, killed Transocean oil worker was fiercely concerned about BP safety standards. And I offer you this story not as a standalone. It is a horror all of its own. It is weeping and grief and wailing and blood and tears all by itself. It's the story of Jason Anderson, a Transocean tool pusher. He told his wife, Shelley, that he was gravely concerned about BP's safety practices out on the rig. The last time he went home, he spent all of his time getting his affairs in order. Shelley Anderson told NBC's Lisa Myers, "Everything seemed to be pressing to Jason about getting things in order in case something happened, teaching me how to do certain things on the motorhome so that I could go and do things with the kids, make sure that I knew how to do everything." While he was home for the last time, he drew up a will and talked to his wife about what he wanted for their daughter and their son. Each time he called her from the rig, Jason was a little more scared, a little more worried. She said they were getting pressure from someplace higher up to do things that maybe weren't exactly the way Jason thought they should be. It was a safety issue. Jason's father told us Jason was concerned that BP, which controlled the rig, kept wanting to stray from procedures to finish the well faster, which Jason considered unsafe. The story continues. Transocean CEO sat in the Anderson kitchen and told Shelley how he would take care of her family, but even before the memorial service could take place, Transocean went to court to limit their overall damages. She said they haven't even let us say goodbye to at least have closure for his memory a little bit, to have time to explain to a 5-year-old that her daddy is in heaven. They're filing these lawsuits to limit us. They need to just slow down. Back up! Like I said, this story isn't a standalone, because I will remind you of the story of Easter Sunday as the jonquils bloomed in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, and a young man who sat down to Easter dinner and told his family, spent Easter Sunday telling his family how much he loved them and how much he wanted for his little daughter, and how they should go about going on without him, just to make sure. He made the long walk down the carpet in a little country church to pledge his soul to Christ Jesus, lest he die unsaved inside Massey's hell hole at Upper Big Branch. Now, there's more than 1,000 miles of distance and 1.5 months time between those two people. But they were working under similar circumstances, similar conditions, in the eternal, relentless, soulless, merciless, insane drive for more holy profit, and they were but toys in the process. And I would submit to you that those two are the same story, driven by the same fears, created by the same predatory corporatism. On one end, Transocean and BP, Tony Hayward. And on the other end, Don Blankenship. And I don't care how devoted to West Ham football Tony Hayward is, or how much he enjoys his skiing vacations and getting there, and sailing trips in the Caribbean. Probably says Caribbean instead of Caribbean. There's no difference, not a damn bit, between him and Don Blankenship, who throws his McDonald breakfast at his maid because she didn't get the order right. Not a damn bit. Not a damn bit. It is the same story. The story of abused workers driven to the limits of their very existence. Just as the BP story is the same story as all the ecologic, environmental horror that takes place on dry land all around this country for the extraction of coal. It is the same story, and we forget that at our peril. It is the same story. Same story. And I cannot forget that horse's-ass so-called environmentalist who tweeted some weeks back, why are people still emailing about coal when they should be tweeting about oil-pocalypse? And he calls himself an environmentalist. Glenn Horwitz. And just moments ago, I received a pitch email, a blast email, from Stephen Beale, B-I-E-L, of Move On Political Action. Oil spill, vigil, oil subject line, oil spill vigil in Beckley. Dear Move On member, it's just unbelievable. By Tuesday, the oil spill in the Gulf will have been gushing out for 50 days straight. It might already be five times larger than the Exxon Valdez, and now BP says the spill probably won't be stopped until August. Meanwhile, our political leaders in Washington aren't even talking about the real solution, getting off oil once and for all and fully powering our economy with clean energy. It's clear we need a major public outcry to make this horrible tragedy a turning point. So on Tuesday, day 50 since the spill, we're organizing emergency oil spill vigils to demand an end to our dependence on oil, call for stepped-up efforts to end the spill, and stand in solidarity with those affected in the Gulf. Can you host an oil spill vigil next Tuesday in Beckley, Bob? Click here to get started. Stephen Beale will never see, of course, what I wrote back, but I hit reply, and I did write. Dear Stephen, we won't be holding an oil spill vigil in Beckley, West Virginia. You see, Stephen, here in Beckley, West Virginia, our whole lives are a vigil for our community and our nation. Stephen, we deal here with mountaintop removal coal extraction. Our children in Appalachia are poisoned. Our communities are erased. Appalachian people who have been here for nine generations are battling ethnic cleansing being perpetrated by coal companies with the connivance of our state, local, and federal governments. I regret to inform you, Stephen, that we don't have any dead dolphins to show you, and not even the graves of our old people. They've been shoved over into valley fills. Perhaps, Stephen, someday Move On can take note of the fact that Appalachian people are Americans, too. Sorry, I can't help with a vigil right now. Best regards, Bob Kincaid, Appalachian human rights activist. Because it's all the same story. And it seems like everybody but the Horn and a handful of dedicated activists like Judy Bonds and Maria Gano and Lorella Scarborough and Beau Webb and Jeff Biggers and others, Larry Gibson. And a few others. Friends of mine. Colleagues. Fellow hillbillies. It seems like they're the only ones who recognize it. That it's all the same story. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
You preach, Brother Bob. You preach that Church of Appalachia.
We're trying, Brian. We're trying.
God love you. I just, it's been quite a show tonight.
Thank you.
It's been quite a show. I know exactly what you're saying to that, to the Move On guy there. Right. They're a good organization, but
they are. I'm not. Yeah, I don't have an issue. No. But it's the myopia. It's the myopia that's going to kill us, Brian.
It's the myopia, and it's still at the same time. You know, last night you just, you know, I got the first news of that the cameraman or the journalist that got the where BP wasn't allowing people to go to see those poor dying birds down there in the Gulf. And damn it, whether you do it to a mother bear, you know, with a mountaintop removal crushing her and her that mother and her family, or you do it to those poor dying birds. You're doing it to God's children, God's other children that they speak about, and to Jesus. Those are not just like legendary type of paintings or that guy. Jesus really, the Prince of Peace, not the guy that these phony Christianists and corporatists are saying backs the Iraq War and Iraq invasion and the enslavement of the Semitic Iraqi people and the murderous attack on that freedom. Peaceful flotilla for aiding the Semitic people of great people of Gaza, the Palestinians. These are our fellow human beings. It Jesus was a Prince of Peace. He was a Semite, for God's sake. He would probably, you know, he would, his brothers, his Palestinian brothers.
You got to remember, Brian, he hung out with Semites. Or not Semites, Samaritans. Samaritans.
And he was
he hung out with everybody. He didn't just hang out with the good Jewish population.
That's right. That's right. And he was a kid from the poor side of town there, son of the carpenter Joseph. And he was, but he loved children. He loved animals. He loved the innocent things in life. Like a puppy, like a young baby. That they always have that innocence. That dog is a reverse of God because they come from. I believe they come. I'm showing my Christian belief there. Like you were talking about the Sikhs before. I'm revealing my own belief system there that they come from an innocent place and they're still affected by that. Like young children haven't learned how to hate yet, and like little kittens love to play and animals feel love. You know, even make fun of rodents and rats and all that stuff. But the scientists now know that the rats, male rats, they like to serenade the female rats at night there and all that. Try the best singer gets the girl. That probably, so that ain't gonna be the cracky voiced Irish tenor Brian if I was a member of the rodent family there. Right? But the fact is, you just said it there. If we had a Church of Appalachia with Reverend Bob Kincaid, that's the kind of Christianity I would want to come back to. Not the child molesting enabling Catholic Church, the phony Catholic Church of today. It's driven me into the Church of England there, the Anglican Church of Henry VIII, I guess, was the true founder of that church, basically. He was the power that made that because he had to have the male heir, I guess, was it the Man for All Seasons movie there. And the fact is, this phony religionist bastards here, they're all friends of coal, friends of the oil corporations. Bobby Jindal, why don't you use your name? His name is Preduce or whatever.
Piyush.
The original Irish Gaelic Celtic non-white name there, lad. It's not Bobby. You say your real name, Piyush. That's a good name. That's a good all-American name as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. It just like you just... Bob, I just right now I'm going through a thing. This happens to a lot of us now. A growing number, too many. I have a problem with the cyber crimes, fraudulent credit card charges in my credit card. I just went right over to my bank today. There, they're helping me out with the security, with that and that kind of situation. There, it's disgusting, and we're tracking them down. We're I try to nip this in the bud. That insidious kind of cyber crime that enrages me. The fact is. And I was, for a manic, depressive, schizophrenic guy like me, that's not a good idea for me to just let my anger control me, though, either. And I was really angry at everybody. I was walking around when I was getting things, when I realized this, that a company that they spotted it there, where I usually get my some office supplies there, they spotted that some of the customers, they have experienced cyber crimes, and that they may have been a compromised there. Financial information. It could be that, or it could be something else. But they are tracking it down. I'm getting a whole new credit card number and try to. I may not need to change all my information of the bank and account number and all that too. I may have caught it in time. I was a victim of identity theft in March of it back in 2004. It's a disgusting thing for any human being to have to go through there. You know, at least a mugger on the street there, he can punch me out and I could maybe identify him from the police. At least they're out in the open somewhat compared to some sneaky bastard on the internet. But the fact is, that's nothing compared to what the evil you could see in those photographs of those dying birds. The evil that you could see in those, in a coal miner today, you could still see, what your last call was talking about, the ashen black faces there of coal miners emerging from coal mines. Not, in Appalachia, yes, but not just in Appalachia. You just talked of the tar sands of Canada, but also the Chinese mines are, if anything, they're at least as murderous as the mines of West Virginia. They have to unionize those mines again in West Virginia. By law, they should all be unionized. They have a much better safety record, right? The union.
Well, they do. But the thing that we have to get smarter than that, because the bottom line is we have got to learn to stop using coal to generate electricity. There's a big difference between using it to make metal and using it to generate electricity.
That's right. That's right. And that just we had. I think New Hampshire, like I said, we're down to there's one coal-fired plant here for electricity that's left. There were two up to a couple of years ago, I think. But it's still, the fact is, you know, you look at all those neon lights in New York City. That so much of that is powered by West Virginia coal, right? Or Appalachian coal. That
absolutely.
Is
yeah. That little widget at ilovemountains.org.
Yeah.
Where you put in your zip code. That's all you do is you put in your zip code.
Yeah.
And whatever the zip code is, it will give you direct links between wherever you are and whether you have connections to mountaintop removal.
That's right. And I wanted to, because it's the weekend, and but I know maybe we can be too euphemistic trying to have a look at the gallows humor side of life and that kind of thing there. And just I was going to read something from a... Yeah, this is the Cruel Shoes by Steve Martin. There, comedian.
Well, no offense, Brian, but we can't do it because, frankly, I'm out of time.
That's fine. That's fine. That's not the way to end it, anyways. Because just you ended beautifully with your powerful sermon you just did there, Reverend Bob. There, you have a great weekend. Have a productive and good time down there at DC too. Have a good night, sir.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
Bye
now. Bye. That's Brian in New Hampshire. And that's the thing. As working people, ordinary people, we absolutely, we spend our lives engaged in what is increasingly a struggle for basic survival. And it is crazy making. You know, that's the dichotomy between the reality of that song I played a couple of minutes ago and the how it is, the how it is now. There really was, albeit badly flawed, an America once upon a time where we tried to live up to America's promise. Even in the midst of the civil rights struggle, the civil rights struggle itself was a struggle to help America live up to its promise. With ideas of the public commons and all that goes with it, and the public good and the good of all, that makes us all better. It was a happier time, even without the sepia tint of memory. And the America we have today is an America that has been wholly created by vicious, profiteering, right-wing corporatists who see profit as holy above all else, both WHOLLY and HOLY. And that is where we find ourselves. Brian's right. I'm out of here. The next time you hear from me will be noon Eastern time Monday from the Radio Row of the America's Future Now conference at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. So I'm not going to have any more time to remind you that this network operates solely on two things, your kind contributions and the participation of Coal River Mountain Watch. We seek to raise $2,000 a month to keep the horn going. We ended May in a hole. And what we do in June, make sure that there will be a July. What happens in July, make sure there will be an August. We live month to month and hand to mouth. Your support, your contributions are necessary to the continued functioning of the horn. If you haven't lately, and if you can, and again, this has nothing to do with my travel or anything like that. We're talking about the operation of the horn. If you can, use the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com or the snail mail address. Please. Thanks to everyone who makes the horn go. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, to Gene and Susan, our news ninjas. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer and webmaster, web designer, and oh so many other things that I call upon him for. Thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, nothing happens here without Ben. Thanks to Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Our columnist, Reverbo, of Cavalcade of Crazy. And my head writer is David in Tennessee. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Thunderacious, had a bunch of lightning overnight, but we made it through. The electricity is still electrificating, and it is Friday on the front porch, on the horn, live from the hills and hollers of what is left of once beautiful, once wild, once wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia. I'm Bob, of course. And we made it to the end of a very interesting week, going extra innings to two nights out of the week. Last night and Monday night, the Memorial Day holiday night. It'll be a regular
show, I don't dare use the word normal. Tonight, of course, or tomorrow morning, or whenever the heck it is you're listening to the program. I love global media. I love being global media. I love global being global media that is not in the sway or the death grip of the transnational corporations, because that means you, me, I, we get to say all kinds of stuff on this program. And there's something sort of refreshing about that. But it is. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn, and you are welcome to chime in this evening. You know how it goes. And I figured we would just, well, okay, program note. This is just another gentle reminder. While we have had as ordinary, if not normal, a week as one may imagine here on the horn, we get Abby on Monday. Abby? Abby who? Abby Normal. Yeah. We get Abby on Monday because come Sunday I get on the road, I pack the gig case and all the wires and the connectors and the clamps and the hoses and the all of that stuff into a vehicle, and I get my merry butt up the road headed for Washington D.C. and the America's Future Now conference live from the Omni Shoreham Hotel. Ah, Lordy, how I wish that Guy James was able to join me for this one. I've gotten kind of used to working with Guy, and he will be sorely missed on this expedition. But he will be ably compensated for by the redoubtable, indefatigable Rick Smith of the Rick Smith Show, live from Pennsylvania, that gets played on this radio network on Saturdays and Sundays in the rerun loop. Rick will be there with me, and the way it'll work out is I will start broadcasting at noon and go to 3 on Monday and Tuesday, and Rick will follow me and do something like 3 to 6-ish, and then, or 3 to 5:30, and then from 5:30 to 6, Rick and I will wrap together, as in wrap up, not like, you know, yo, rap. No, I'm far too pink to do that sort of a thing. No, I can't. I'm just... No poetry on the fly. I can extemporize, but not poetrize. And that's not even a word. So Monday and Tuesday, the live broadcast schedule is noon to 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Adjust for your time zone accordingly. Of course, podcasts will go up as ordinary and as usual. And then... I had said there might be a show on Wednesday. There will not be because I'll be getting a late start out of D.C. No broadcasting on Wednesday, but on Wednesday at 1 o'clock, since I'm already going to be there, I'm going to run on down to the National Press Club. And I seem to recall where that building is. I've been by it a few times, but never in it. Run on down to the National Press Club where Ashley Judd, the beautiful Ashley Judd, will be doing a presser on the topic of mountaintop removal and how it is continuing to destroy Appalachia. And I figured since I'm already going to be there, I might as well go on down there. Seems like the right thing to do. We need, if she's going to, she doesn't need to be the only hillbilly in the room, poor Miss Ashley. Mrs. Ashley. She's married to a race car driver, right? Dario, is it Dario Franchitti? I don't follow racing, so sorry. But that'll put me probably 9, 10 o'clock getting home at best. So no show on Wednesday. We'll just call that a travel day and get back at it on Thursday and Friday of next week. So that's the schedule, just so you'll know. That's the America's Future Now conference. If you're not following me on Twitter, follow. Follow, by all means. It's real simple. Bob Kincaid. That's what I am on Twitter. That's what I am here. It's what I am everywhere. I am Bob Kincaid. Follow me on Twitter, and to the extent that I have time, I will do some tweeting about the conference. I'm looking forward to it. We've got a very, very busy, very, very full lineup of guests scheduled for both days, for both Rick Smith and myself, and I think it will be a Jim Dandy good time. They always are. It's a pleasure working with the Campaign for America's Future, who puts on these events and brings in such fascinating people. I never cease to come away from one of these events without having my perspective adjusted or changed or...